something inside that we need so much. The sight of a touch or the scent of a sound or the strength of an oak roots deep in the ground. The wonder of flowers to be covered and then to burst up through tarmac to the sun again. Or to fly to the sun without burning a wing. To lie in a meadow and hear the grass sing. To have all these things in our memories hoard and to use them to help us.
Take a ride from the high desert and the great American Southwest, exclusively on Sirius XM Radio. This is Dark Matter with your host, Art Bell. Now, here's Art.
And so, another week of extraterrestrial radio begins. Good evening, everybody. I am Art Bell, and this is Dark Matter. A few little housekeeping measures, I guess, to begin. About a million requests for a couple of people, and I don't have immediate access to them. One is Mel Waters of Mel's Hole fame. Mel, if you're out there, would love to get an email or a phone call from you or contact my producer, and we'll do it again and get an update. Mel's Hole. Well, it was about a man who found a hole in the ground that apparently was endless. Some pretty interesting properties. Also, John Teeter. If John is anywhere near the timeline, John, figure out a way to go to artbell.com, actually, either one of you, and email my producer, Paul Bowman. He's the way to get on the air over here. And we'll see what we can do. So, two oldies but goodies. John Teeter, Mel Waters. By the way, you know who I did talk to? Madman Markham. I've got Madman's tentative phone number. All right, in the housekeeping category, inactivity. A lot of emails. I get lots of emails about, you know, what's going on with the show, Art? Geez, at 90 minutes and then it cuts me off and I've got to reconnect. All right, well, there's a reason for it and a way around it. Number one, if you're listening to the program and you're cut off after 90 minutes, that means you didn't touch anything. So what I'm telling you to do is reach out and touch. Turn your volume up or down a little bit sometime during that 90-minute period. Then they begin counting again. You see, it's a sort of man versus machine thing. They know that man can make mistakes. Not machines, right? In other words, you might tune into the channel and then forget for 3 days that you've got your computer downloading and downloading and downloading. So they do that. And it will save you money and save them money because of streaming costs. You know, bandwidth is money. Have you heard that before? Bandwidth is money. So all you've got to do to prevent it anyway is reach over and touch the volume or something, turn it up or down a hair, or almost anything you do on the receiver will reset that 90 minutes so you don't get cut off. Hope that helps. Now, the wormhole. The wormhole has been experiencing unusual gravitational effects. What that means, translation, is that our wormhole at artbell.com, which is supposed to reliably send a message over here, actually had some sort of software glitch in it. And of course, you guys pounded the holy you-know-what out of it. And that contributed to its demise, its premature demise. It crashed about 21 times during the last show that I did. So, we now have a new, improved, cannot-be-crashed wormhole. Keith Rowland went to work and wrote code and made a new wormhole, and it really is sweet. And later on tonight, I'm sure we will test its metal by having you all send a bunch of messages. But I do have faith that this new creation of Keith's, because he's very, very good at what he does, is going to hold up. Anyway, we're going to find out. BlackBerry. You see the news today, 4.7 billion, something like that. People who have BlackBerries love them. I know I have an iPhone 5. It's hard to understand why people love them so much. They're businessmen mostly, but they love them. Now it's sold, and they're going to cater to exactly those people, the business people. So even though you heard the news today, if you're one of those guys, I know Bob Crane is, you'd have to rip his BlackBerry out of his cold, dead fingers. So you'll be okay. And then it was really cute. I saw a kid on CNN earlier today, a three-year-old. And this is sort of an illustration of the times we live in now. A three-year-old. Little boy, cute as heck. But mom and dad had just switched to iOS 7, the new operating system for Apple, and he was crying. I don't like it. I don't want it. Just crying and crying and crying. He doesn't like iOS 7. I'm just getting used to it. I don't know how y'all are doing out there. Looking around the world briefly, Kenyan security forces were in what they said were the final stages of flushing out Islamic extremist terrorists from the shopping mall where so many were killed. There are now, and this is really sad, there are reports that as many as 3 Americans may have been among those who attacked the mall. What? Americans? Really? Iran's new foreign minister is going to join talks with 6 key nations trying to rein in the Islamic Republic's nuclear program. That'll be later this week at the UN. Good luck with that. 30 large dolphins beached themselves in Brazil. We'll figure that one out someday. And another government shutdown. Seriously? It's one of the reasons that I really don't care very much. I mean, you can't avoid politics entirely. But if there's a reason to do it, it's this. Another government shutdown. I almost feel like saying, who the hell cares? You know they'll come right up to the brink and then they'll either shut it down or refund it. You know, it's all about Obamacare, I guess. Selective's DNA, high-velocity DNA tagging system, may come to a neighborhood near you soon. You can actually see it in action, I think, on the web. It's available in both pistol form and rifle form. It is a new tool that would allow government agencies to prevent criminals from running away or disappearing into a crowd before being arrested. Now, what this little baby does, it's a high-velocity tagging system. They shoot you with it, right? Up to 40 meters away. They hit you with selected DNA high-velocity pellet. It contains a unique DNA code to ensure the correct person is apprehended later. DNA pellets used by law enforcement officers tag individuals with the unique selected DNA code from a distance. Just wonderful. On contact with the target, the uniquely coded selected DNA solution leaves a synthetic DNA trace mark that will enable the relevant authorities to confirm or eliminate that person from their involvement. So in other words, if you're protesting something, and I guess you're getting out of control or whatever, they hit you with this, and boom, you're DNA tagged like that. Incredible. The times we live in. And I can still hear that poor little three-year-old crying about iOS 7. I don't want it. Now, the Sentinel Ally is a 9-inch portable stereo oval cylinder speaker that you can carry anywhere you go. Lightweight, fits in a, you know, giant pant pocket, backpack, briefcase, whatever. It's not that big, 9 inches. The Sentinel Ally uses Bluetooth technology, and oh my God, folks, all you do is put it together with your iPhone by Bluetooth. And all the tunes in your teeny little sounding phone now sound like they're in a concert hall. And I'm really not kidding about that comparison. It's just unreasonable how incredible this thing sounds. It's you demo it for somebody and they want it. In fact, you're lucky if they don't carry yours away while you're not looking. So trust me on this, as I keep saying, I don't advertise things I don't absolutely believe in. This thing will knock your socks off. Rechargeable, lasts 9 or 10 hours. To 10 hours. At that volume, it's impossible, but it works. The Sentinel Ally is great for barbecues, trips to the lake, your kitchen counter. Great stereo sound compared to darn near anything. And it's only $69.95. If you were to buy two, you could sell one to a friend at a profit. Call C. Crane right now and order one. $69.95. Trust me. 800-522-8863. That's the number, and you can call it right this minute. 800-522-8863. The Sentinel Ally. Awesome stuff. All right. In a moment, we're going to do a couple of things. We're going to talk about Roswell, and we're going to talk about the Nevada Roswell. I'm Art Bell, and this is Dark Matter.
I hear the drums echoing tonight. She hears only whispers of some quiet conversation. She's coming in 12:30 flight. The moonlit wings reflect the stars that guide me towards salvation. I stopped an old man along the way.
XM, baby, and we're very serious. To call Art Bell, please manipulate your communication device and call 1-855-REAL-UFO. That's 1-855-732-5836.
Well, all right, this is Dark Matter, not some other show, so there's a couple of things I want to note here, and that is that it's kind of a different atmosphere. We have either 3 or 4 hours, you know, virtually to do anything we want. It's amazing how much time we have. If you deduct the commercial time, which is extremely minimal, from the totality of the 3 or 4 hour show, you'll find out you're getting a lot of content. So it's kind of like we can take our time and do things at a little or a bit of a leisurely pace. There's something I want you to hear. And this is, as you know, well, I guess you know, or you may have heard, that Jesse Marcel Jr. passed recently. A real loss. But I was able to dig up the voice of Jesse Marcel Sr. You know, the guy who actually was there at Roswell. And I thought you'd be interested in a couple of things that he had to say. And it's certainly worth pondering as tonight we delve into what could be a Nevada Roswell, or may have been a Nevada Roswell. Listen very carefully. This is Jesse Marcel Sr. It's pretty interesting
stuff. It began in Roswell, New Mexico. Near White Sands and Alamogordo, Roswell was home base for many early tests of atom bombs and guided missiles. Here, also, the practice of military stonewalling may have been perpetrated. The case began when Roswell businessman Dan Wilmot witnessed an amazing object over the town. His son tells the story.
This was their home in July of 1947. It was one summer evening. They were sitting out here. Dad looked up in the west and saw an object that came down and had lights blinking, and it was rather frightening to him, but he said all of a sudden it seemed to rock a little bit and sort of counterbalanced itself, wiggle a little bit, and then seemed to settle down and take off at rapid rate of speed.
The next day, reporters heard that the Air Force had found fragments of the mystery object crashed on a remote ranch northwest of Roswell. Excitement ran high until officials announced it was only a weather balloon. Major Jesse Marcel, in charge of the operation, now tells a far different story.
They took pictures, of course. They had a whole flock of microphones there. They wanted me they wanted some comments from me, but I wasn't at liberty to do that. So all I could do is keep my mouth shut. And General Ramey is the one who discussed or told the newspapers, I mean the newsmen, what it was, and to forget about it. It was nothing more than a weather observation balloon. Of course, which we both knew differently.
Major Marcel had to keep silent because of his strategic position at that time. He was in charge of all security and intelligence on atomic tests in the United States and the Pacific. Marcel retraced his secret recovery operation across the hot New Mexico desert.
We left Roswell perhaps around 3:30 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon. As you can see, it's flat. It is very difficult. In fact, with just verbal directions, we never would have found it. We had to follow the rancher out there.
The crash site was so remote, it took an entire day to drive there.
The following morning, we went out to the site where the crash was. And what I saw, I couldn't believe there was so much of it. It was scattered over such a vast area. So we proceeded to pick up as much of the debris as we could, loaded in the wagon. We filled that up. It took us a good part of the day to do that, because it was such small fragments that we had to do a lot of picking. We found a piece of metal about a foot and a half to 2 feet wide and about 2 or 3 feet long. Felt like you had nothing in your hands. It wasn't any thicker than the foil out of a pack of cigarettes. But the thing about it that got me is that you couldn't even bend it. You couldn't dent it. Even with a sledgehammer, would bounce off of it. So I knew that I had never seen anything like that before. And as of now, I don't know what it was.
There is new evidence that the FBI then got into the case with a different cover story. Lawyer Peter Gersten, searching through declassified government documents, came across a mention of the Roswell case.
One of those documents related to an incident in Roswell, New Mexico, which indicated that the object which had crashed was an experimental kite. The FBI investigated the incident and determined that it was terrestrial, that it was from an organization which had been doing research in experimental kites.
What did crash in this desert? A UFO? A weather balloon? A radar-reflecting kite?
It was not anything from this Earth that I'm quite sure of.
All right.
Because I was being an intelligence officer, I was familiar with just about all materials used in aircraft and in our air travel. This is nothing like that. It could not be. It could not have been.
There you go. That's Major Marcel himself. Interesting to be able to hear his words after all these years, huh? And then one adjoining fact that's pretty interesting. The Roswell incident occurred on July 7th of 47. It was only 3 months later that by order of the National Security Act of 1947, that would be September 19th, 1947, the CIA was created. What a coincidence, huh? All right, coming up now, Jeremy Meter. Jeremy is a Las Vegas, Nevada resident, so he's just over the hill here, who's been interested in the paranormal and ufology since he was very young, so we can probably ask him about the paranormal, too. He's part of a group from Southern Nevada called the Bigfoot's Pad Paranormal. What a name. He co-founded that in 2003. Jeremy has appeared on numerous media interviews and TV networks like Sci-Fi, History Channel, International Channel, speaks frequently about ufology and the supernatural. In the last few years, Jeremy has been working on a case from Northern Nevada involving lots of strange UFO activities. And here is Jeremy Meter. Jeremy, hello.
Yeah, how are you doing today, Art?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing good. Just got done eating dinner around here, actually.
Okay. I didn't interrupt, I hope.
Oh, no, you're good. I actually finished, like, right before the show began.
Okay. Are you on a cell phone?
Yeah, right now I actually am.
Okay. Do you have a real phone?
No, just this one.
Only that one. What happens if your battery goes dead, Jeremy?
I'm actually plugged into the wall right now.
All right.
It's like right next to the computer if I saw it.
All right.
It's close.
Well, we'll hope for the best. It's hard to know where to begin because I hate to say this, and, you know, I appear ignorant, but I never heard of the Ely crash.
Not very many people have, actually.
Oh?
See, where to begin? Well, the Ely UFO crash is kind of a weird sort of event. When I began researching it, I turned from one UFO crash to two UFO crashes and a UFO landing. I guess people actually get the facts all mixed up and they combine it into one big event. So you're in for a pretty interesting story here today, Art. I know most people find this very fascinating. There are stories of men in black. I've actually encountered the men in black in person. There's physical UFO samples that I was given and I picked up from the crash site area. So there's plenty to talk about here.
For those who don't know, how big a town is Ely today?
It's between 2,500 and 4,000, depending on who you talk to and who you ask exactly.
And
I think Wikipedia says 3,500, I think.
3,500. And back at the time of the alleged crash, how big was
it? I think it was pretty much about the same. There's not really much going on there today because compared to back then, pretty much stayed exactly how it was for the most part.
Isn't that something? Not many towns do. That's very unusual. So it's always been kind of just a little town.
Yeah. There's three grocery stores, about a handful of gas stations, I don't think there's any really big name brand department stores there. It's kind of just picture small town America. The best way I could compare it is think of the town on Stephen King's It's the Clown. I hate to say that, but that's what I compare it to.
Okay. Any history of UFOs in that area, either prior to or after this event?
Yes. Actually, the Ely area has been full of UFOs even before this happened.
Oh.
I think it was in 1844 or 1864, I was told. Supposedly a UFO had crashed into farmland out there back then, but I haven't really researched that specific incident that much. But there's also an area over, it's called Duck Creek. It's right over the mountain from Ely. It's probably about a 30-minute, 45-minute drive. There's been long since been stories of UFOs being reported back there. There's an area, I guess there's only about 10 or 15 small farms out there. Well, apparently there's UFOs, or they call them strange lights. I just call them UFOs because I'll get into that in a few minutes. But these lights, I guess they come out of the Duck Creek area where there's no inhabitants, and these glowing red and purple lights, they come through this canyon, and they ride by these people's houses, and I guess they light the houses up, whatever color these are glowing, and I guess there's no sound. They glide, I guess, like 6 or 10 feet off the ground, depending on the specific incident, and there's an area called Kalamazoo Road in specific where they're seen. And I haven't seen these lights myself, but I have plenty of stories involving these lights. And one of the UFO stories involving the actual crash comes from this general area. That's where one of the UFOs came from.
All right. But, well, you would acknowledge, I'm sure, this is not a really high-profile deal like Roswell was. In other words, not a lot of people know about it at any rate, right?
Not at all.
All right, so then what in the world, how did you get interested in something that nobody's sort of ever heard of before?
Funny story. I was actually doing another radio program back in 2008, and somebody had come on the lines and asked me a story, because it was actually a ghost show I was doing. And somebody had called and asked if I'd heard about a UFO crash in northern Nevada, and I had never heard of it. So I went online and I searched it, and I found that basically the only thing you find online is a date and the location, which is Ely. And I got intrigued. I went down to UNLV, which is the big college down here for your listeners that are far away. I went to the microfilm collections down at UNLV, and the more I started researching, I was finding things that were very strange or didn't exactly add up. Like, the crash date didn't make any sense, because I found basically nothing for the date that they had listed on the internet. Well, I started getting really, really sneaky, and I actually found the original author who posted it in an old magazine called the New Atlantean Journal back in the, I think it was the 70s, 1974 or so. And they had actually directed me, the author of that magazine directed me towards the original researcher that had found it. And we got to talking, and based on his facts, I actually went to the town of Ely and found there are tons of firsthand witnesses, tons of stories, been to the crash sites and all that. It's interesting. I mean, I don't really know, have any words to describe how weird the whole situation turned out to be.
With this purported crash, mm-hmm. There's amazing stories to go with it. For example, they say there were 16 bodies. Is that correct?
I know of pretty close number. I know of at least 6 or 8 of them. There's probably more, but I only know about six or eight. So,
Do you know anything about those bodies? In other words, any details from anybody who saw? I mean, if there were bodies, then mm-hmm. Somebody must have seen them, unless the military got to the site. I'm probably jumping way ahead here and closed everything off. so nobody could see. In other words, how does word come of bodies, whether it be 6 or 16?
Well, this is one of the most amazing parts of the story. I don't know if you want me to tell it all right now or not, but there were stories of civilians. They actually found some of these aliens were living. They got away from the crash site and were wandering around the flatlands, and right outside of town, actually, people were reporting some of these aliens were alive walking around. So there was some bodies that some aliens had died at the crash site, yes, but there was actually some reports of them actually, I would just call it escaping, but they were escaped and were actually wandering right outside of town, probably about 2 or 3 miles from people's houses.
My God, these are people that actually reported to you that they saw these creatures?
Yes, I actually didn't have any reports of the alien bodies, and then until the Ely Daily Times newspaper had wrote, they put me in the paper, and I told basically a little bit of my story, and I got probably about between 5 and 10 different callers who didn't know each other who actually told me that they had seen either the dead bodies or the living bodies. They're not bodies, but living aliens.
Did they describe them?
Yes. This is another thing that I've never heard before besides maybe the Flatwoods, West Virginia case of the same year. But anyways, I don't really know how to describe it without giving you a specific eyewitness story, and then I could get more into it.
Okay. Any description would be very welcome.
Well, I'm going to give you a story real quick, Art, and then I'll get more into the two different types of beings that they reported.
Sure.
Well, the most detailed account of the alien bodies, there was four children. Their ages, I think, 4, 6, 8, and 10, like all 2 years apart. Two of them were, one was a brother and one was a sister, and the other two were friends, just like their friends. They lived at the base of a mountain right outside of town. I don't know if they want me to give away the exact name of the mountain right away, because people are going to go out to the mountain to try to find something. I'll get into that in a little bit. Well, this mountain is literally overlooking the town of Ely.
Okay.
And people live on the base of this mountain. And there's a big, giant boulder in the center of the mountain. And I guess all the townspeople back then and nowadays, they go up to this boulder and they hang out. Some people go up there and drink beer, or people go up there and just teenagers hang out and that sort of thing. Well, these kids were up on this mountain. They were their house at the base of the mountain. They were deep in this mountain and they were playing. I don't know what they were playing, but I guess they were just playing around. And I guess the sister, because I told you, three of them were girls and one was a boy. The boy is now deceased, but the sister was the original one that contacted me. I was talking to the sister, and she had told me that while in the middle of them playing, her brother was tearing off. He took off running very fast past them. I guess he was like in the hysterics crying and running away, and they didn't know what he was running from.
Mm-hmm.
And the next thing I know, I guess the woman said that one of the other girls took off running and passed her from the same direction this boy had been from. And I guess she said that she had turned around toward this big boulder, and on the opposite side of this boulder, she said there was something she said that they called it Thumper the Rubber Man, is what they originally called it. And this was reported.
I'm sorry, again, please. They called it what?
Thumper the Rubber Man.
Thumper the
I don't know where that name came from, but it was a robotic-like creature, a robotic being. She said that it was metallic looking, and she said you could see the reflection of the rocks and the trees and this being's, I guess we could, its torso, its whole body. She said that it had at least one of the arms was a pincher. I told her like Robbie the Robot, and she said, yeah, kind of like Robbie the Robot. But whatever this thing was, she said it was either walking fast or it was running, but whatever this thing was, it chased all four of these kids off the mountain and they ran into their house. Whatever this creature was actually pacing around their house. And she said what's that?
Now, is this thing large, small?
She said that it was about the size of an average man, so about 5 to 6 feet tall. It wasn't.
But with pincers.
She said it had at least one pincher. I could have had it on both hands. I know that she said at least one hand.
Okay.
But whatever this thing was, I guess they ran into the house, and one of the little girls actually fainted, and she had to be brought to the hospital eventually sometime throughout the day because she was having problems breathing and was having heart problems because she got so scared at seeing this thing.
Right.
And apparently they called the police, and the police went out to the house, and they never found whatever the thing was. I guess it had went back into the forest. But here's where the story gets more interesting.
It's already interesting enough. Hold on a second. It's already interesting enough now.
Yeah.
You said the police became involved, right?
Yeah, the police showed up on the property.
So perhaps, with luck, there's some sort of police report that was filed?
Well, I went down to the police station and tried to get the police reports. They told me that supposedly they couldn't access the reports that were that old, which I think, I don't know if they can or they can't. I know of other researchers that have found older reports than that, but...
Yeah, a local police station, maybe not. That's an awful long time ago.
Well, apparently...
So that we're clear, what is the exact date again of the crash, please?
July 7th, 1952, which is 5 years to the date after Roswell.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? Same day of the year, huh? July 7th.
Oh, yeah, 5 years later.
Wow. All right, so no police report. Nevertheless, the police were there. One child ended up in the hospital. This is really quite a story. And how substantiated do you feel, Jeremy, all this is?
I think it's way underlooked, and I think the whole case in general should be talked about more, and more people should know about it than that do already, personally.
Well, based on what I've heard so far, I would agree with you, yes. It sounds like a big incident. When you have creatures, when you have alleged aliens, people scared, mm-hmm. the police, hospital involved, it's beginning to get to the point where I'm wondering. Now, I'm sorry to be jumping ahead on you, Jeremy, but I looked mm-hmm. all this up on the Internet before I had you on because I wanted to see what sort of story I was getting into. And... I did find a YouTube piece, which, by the way, I sent to Keith, and it's up on artbell.com if you want to see it right now. And, indeed, there's been a local investigation, and when they first looked in the newspaper archives, suspiciously, the day in question's newspaper was missing. All the rest of them were there, but the day in question was missing. Now, they did go to, I guess, some microwave backup or something and found a newspaper for that day, but it didn't reference any UFO crash. Am I right?
Yes, because the actual date is in July, and the Internet says that it's August 14th or August 12th. It's actually a month before that. And so that's why the past investigators that tried to look it up have never found any information because uh-huh. they haven't been looking at the right date. They've been looking ahead of time.
Oh, my. Okay.
And
that's all right. Have you now gone back and looked at the correct date and looked for anything in the paper at all?
Yes. Actually, the Nevada newspapers, especially Ely, didn't report any sort of incident. If you go to Oregon, Idaho, Washington, or Utah, it did make the front page of many newspapers in those states. Like the government or somebody censored the Ely newspapers and all the ones in those little towns that are around there.
Huh.
Because
amazing.
I don't know why a Nevada paper, especially the town of Ely, would not report that in their paper, but yet Ogden and Salt Lake City would have it in theirs. Because if it makes front page in Salt Lake City, and that's 2 or 3 hours away, I'm pretty sure that would have been front page news in Ely, you would think.
All right. Boy, I wish you had a real phone there. Cell phones kind of clip things off a little bit, and sometimes it's hard to hear. All right, I'm going to ask you to hold tight for a moment. We're going to take a very quick break, and when we get back, we'll get further into the story, but it certainly is fascinating. I mean, imagine something of this magnitude, many bodies, and a crashed UFO in Ely, right here in Nevada, not far away from where I am now. Well, relatively. All of that, and we're just now talking about it, after all these years. You're listening to Dark Matter.
Initiate a dialogue sequence with Art Bell. Please call 1-855-REAL-UFO. That's 1-855-732-5836.
You know, this song, I guess I had never heard when I was in Manila, the Philippines. I heard it on a radio station, and I went, wow, I really like that. And, of course, I obtained it and then pretty much listened to it until my ears bled. That's the only way I can get a song out of my head, is to just do it and do it and do it and do it until I see blood. Welcome back. My guest is Jeremy Meter, and he's talking about a UFO crash in Ely, Nevada, right here at home. And it's incredibly fascinating stuff. I mean, really good stuff, but that cell phone connection he's got is absolutely awful. We're going to have to see what we can do to get through it. With regard to the wormhole, let's see. David says, the wormhole's a nice idea, but it says, do not expect a reply. I don't see how a reply is possible. It looks like a one-way street to me, in which case an expectation of a reply is erroneous. It should say replies are not possible. Well, wrong, David. What do you think you just got? That's a reply. So the wormhole, I mean, feel free to test it, folks. Blast it a little bit. Send me messages. Send me questions for Jeremy, and we'll see if it holds up. I'm telling you, last week it collapsed like crazy. Now, Heath coded all weekend. I don't mean he, you know, lost his heartbeat or breathing or anything. He coded, wrote code, until we got a new wormhole. And so far, so good. All right, Jeremy, welcome back.
Mm-hmm.
Now, question for you, Jeremy. Did my producer ask you if you had a landline phone?
Yeah.
And you answered what?
I actually have my cell phone at the moment.
Yeah, I understand that. When he asked you if you have a landline phone, what did you say?
I just said that because he asked me if I had a neighbor or something, I could go use their phone. I said, no, I didn't.
I see. Okay, well, it's really tough on the air, Jeremy, because what you're saying is really fascinating stuff, and I'm going to try and continue with you here, but it's, you know, cell phones are just not the way to go for an interview. That's why we talk about landline phones. So let's keep going as we can. Anyway, the actual crash site itself, Jeremy, you said it was overlooking the town of Ely. So obviously it's up on a hill, up on a mountain, whatever. Is there
not the actual crash site. That's where the living aliens were reported.
Okay.
The actual crash site's a little bit further away. It's like on a little bit further down.
All right, look, it's been a long time. I don't think there's a lot to fear from people going out there. Can you tell me where the crash site is specifically?
The actual crash site is outside of the town of Ely. It's close to a town called McGill and another smaller town called Cherry Creek. And the alien beings, this is my theory, they probably came through the mountains or the woods. Because the best way to describe this for you and your listeners is there's flatlands. And at the base, these flatlands go all the way to the base of the mountain, and that's where the mountain starts. That's where the forest begins.
Okay.
And there are two crash sites. There's a southern one and a northern one. This is the southern one I'm talking about here. The southern crash site, these alien beings could have walked through the woods. It's not very far away. They could have walked onto this towards the mountain where they those kids seen it.
Right.
But...
So, all right, here's one for you, and I'm sorry. Can you give me actual GPS coordinates?
GPS coordinates?
Yes.
I might be able to. Let me look at my notes real quick.
Okay, I would think through a long period of investigation, you might have marked the actual site with GPS coordinates. I don't think there's any harm in giving it out on this late date. I mean, it's been so long now, right? 1952. So people want to go and visit, and if people can find something, then hey, why not? It's okay. Sure. If you find them, let me know. It's not something I have to have right now. Okay?
Yeah. So I'm trying to find the name of the mountain is called Squaw Peak.
Squaw Peak.
And I'm trying to find the name of the specific area where that boulder is. I know I have it written right here. But yeah, I guess she said the locals just call it Big Rock. This is what my notes say. It's called Big Rock. It's halfway up on Squaw Peak.
And that's actually where the crash site is?
That's where they had seen the aliens, the living alien creature I just told you about.
Okay. All right, so that's not the actual crash site.
No,
that's
I haven't
what
gotten
I'm
to the actual crash site.
Okay,
yet.
don't worry about it, Jeremy. Go ahead and tell the story, and maybe during breaks or whatever, if you can find GPS coordinates, I would love to give it to the audience, because some people might want to go out there and look around. And they might find something, Jeremy. You get enough people going through an area, you might turn something up.
Well, I know that one of the girls still lives on the base of the mountain still in the same house, so I was going to say I don't know if she wants people to be out there, because that's her actual backyard, she said. Part of it is if they go down low enough.
Okay, I get it. I wouldn't want it either.
But,
Go ahead.
I was going to say, did you want me to talk a little bit about the general story before we get deep into specific parts of the story?
I do, yes. Go ahead.
All right, well, I'll give you a generalization of the story, then we'll get deeper into specific parts as we go along. Well, around 10:30 in the morning on July 7th, 1952, over Ogden, Utah, they had seen some kind of a weird fiery object coming down at a 180-degree angle coming towards the ground.
Wow.
It was struggling to stay in the air. This was reported as an orange fireball with leaving a blue gaseous looking cloud of smoke behind. And
really?
This object was originally reported in Idaho. I guess it flew over to Utah and then it went back towards Nevada. And Ely, Nevada is kind of in the northern part of the state towards the top right corner.
Right.
Well, at the same time, around the same exact time, there were civilian witnesses that reported a green T-shaped object with a gaseous blue smoke trail behind it coming from the Washington and Oregon area.
Wow.
And these two objects are coming towards each other, and the next thing you know, the eastern object flies over Salt Lake City. Well, Hill Air Force Base, they actually had a tower there. And they reported that they had seen this object, and they actually got planes in the air to chase after this object, I guess, is what the Project Blue Book reports say.
Oh, no, so, wow. This is really full of surprises, Jeremy.
Yeah, Project Blue Book actually has about 10 or 15 pages on this specific incident.
Okay.
Well,
that's good. That's good to know. I had no idea it was documented at all. And here you are coming with all this information, people having sighted the descending objects. Wow.
Well, here's what happened. So there was a B-17 that's flying around Pillar Air Force Base doing maneuvers, I guess training of some sort. It doesn't really say, but this B-17 was doing training maneuvers, and the tower told them to go chase after this object. Well, they were going 300 miles per hour, and they said they came nowhere near this thing. They flew through that gaseous blue cloud I was telling you about, but they could never catch up to it. Well, people over in Montello, Nevada, which is in the top right corner, almost in Idaho and Utah, they reported a giant explosion, and this thing had came down and actually smashed into the ground outside of the town of Montello. It's an area called the Dairy Valley.
Okay.
And nowadays, the small town that was in the Dairy Valley is gone. Montello is the closest town, and only 35 people live there nowadays. So if you plan on ever, I'll talk about the crash site a little bit, but that crash site's actually like a three-day drive, basically. And then I guess one of the objects had hit the other one, and one had came down south and was struggling to stay in the air, and it had crashed at the site that's near McGill and Cherry Creek, I was telling you, right by Ely. So this is where the story gets confusing, is people report that the two crash sites are actually one crash site, and there's something that happened in the 1970s in the town of Ruth, which is even closer to Ely than the Cherry Creek crash site. But that was a UFO landing. I'll get into that in a little bit.
You know, that's not unusual. I mean, even with Roswell, you've got one crash site, no, wait, you've got two, and you've got bodies at another location. So, you know, what you're saying is kind of consistent with the way these things seem to be reported.
Yeah. Well, something interesting I forgot to tell you was the Ogden newspaper from July 8th, 1952, they actually reported that this fire had burned 600 acres of land. Wait, I think it was July 8th. Yeah, July 8th. They reported that this fire had burned 600 acres from the northern object. The southern object started a fire, but it wasn't as big. The fire in the southern object was reported at 11:30 in the morning, and the northern one was reported around 10:30, 10:45. So they're pretty close between the amount of witnesses.
Right.
The one that had crashed up north was closer to town than the one that was in the south.
And the one that was sighted in Utah, that was at about 10:30 in the morning, right?
Yeah, the military from Hill Air Force Base actually reported that it was at 10:30 in the morning, their time, is when they had initially seen the thing on fire.
Okay. Well,
but,
we may have had our own Roswell here. Is that what you conclude? After all your investigation, do you conclude that what happened here in Nevada in Ely was, in fact, a Roswell for Nevada?
Definitely. I have stories of alien bodies from the southern crash site, but the northern one, I don't have any stories of bodies up there.
All right. Now, all of this would have been absolutely impossible, it seems to me, to cover up. And according to, you know, the investigation you've done, it hasn't all been covered up. But at some point, and again, I hate to rush ahead, but was all this covered up? Did they come in and, I don't know, quarantine the area like there's been a plane crash or something?
Well, I'll start with the northern crash site. The northern crash site, actually volunteer firefighters from the town of Montello came up to the crash site, and I guess they had come up to this object. And while they were trying to put out this fire, because they didn't know what it was at first, they were trying to put out this fire, and the military told them to leave, and they quarantined off that area. Well, the southern crash site's a whole different story, because there's railroad tracks and a freeway, Highway 50, I think it is, runs right by where the crash site is. So there were people driving by, and the railroad was driving by with their train cars. So quite a few people seen the southern crash site, or Highway 93, sorry. I just remember that, but yeah, quite a few people drove past that crash site. I guess the most interesting story I found came from a train worker The Nevada Northern Railway is what the company was called. They used to run trains coming from Ruth, Nevada, which has one of the biggest copper mine pits in the world. It's called the Robinson Mine. It's been open since the 1800s. But anyways, this train used to bring people to work, used to bring people to school, because it was a remote area, especially at that time. And the people relied heavily on this train. Well, I think I went to the Nevada Northern Railway Museum back in May, and they actually have records of every train log pretty much since the company started and when it ended. And the story I'm about to tell you, actually found documentation of it at the Railway Museum, and I'll get to that in a minute. But anyway, so this man was riding on a train. I'm not exactly sure if he was an engineer or what he was doing on the train. I never asked him, but he was riding the rails, and he came across a section of the track, the man told me, that was torn up like pretzels. The tracks were destroyed. They were thrown all over the place. They're in the nearby creek, up in the mountains. He said they were everywhere.
Torn up like pretzels? Is that what you said?
That's his exact words. He says they were bent like pretzels.
Bent like pretzels. Wow.
Yes.
Imagine what it would take to bend the track, a train track. Imagine what it would take.
Oh, yeah. Well, so they managed to stop this train just in the nick of time, I guess. And I guess he said when they stopped the train, they didn't know what had happened to the rails. But I guess if they look off to your immediate left, off on the base of this mountain, they had seen where this object, he didn't know what it was at this point in time, but the UFO had come from the sky, crashed into the ground and skidded into the small brush and small trees at the base of the mountain. And he told me that the thing was still smoking. It had just happened. This was around noon, by the way. He said 12 or 12:30, so it had just happened recently.
Right.
And he said that this object was out into the trees, and I guess whoever was in charge of the train told them to stay put and not to move. Well, some ranchers had come from that Duck Creek area with those ranchers I was telling you about, and they had gone out of their ranches, and they were all climbing on top of this UFO and picking up small pieces off the ground and whatnot.
Really?
This is what the man told me, and this is exactly what so some of the locals stick to this story. They
all right, well, I'm sorry. Again, I'm going back to that YouTube investigation thing. You know, they looked through Ely and talked to the population of Ely as best they could. They couldn't find anybody who could relate the kind of stories you're telling. I mean, my God, if you had climbed on top of a UFO, you, your son, your daughter, your wife, everybody connected with you would have heard that story because you'd be telling it like crazy, so it would be there for generations to come.
Well, the thing about because Ed Pierce is from KOLV News over in Reno was one that did that story that you're talking about.
Right.
He actually has the 1970s and the 1952 crashes or the UFO incidents combined into one. And the people he's talking to he's asking about something that happened over in Ruth, Nevada. And I guess the townspeople didn't know nothing about it. And there's a small town called Eureka, which is up in that area. My grandmother lives in Eureka, so you kind of have to get in with the community or know somebody to get information.
All right.
So it took me probably about 3 or 4 trips before they opened up to me and started telling me, because the first couple times I went up there, I was told there was no stories available, that no one had seen anything. But once I started telling them about my grandmother lived up there and I visit there all the time and showed them I was serious about the whole incident, they started opening up to me about all this.
That's remarkable.
You have to go to all the small towns up there, too, to get information.
So there were, if there were people actually climbing on a UFO or what was left of it after the crash, then there must have been some descriptions of, I don't know, its shape, its size, its texture, its whatever.
Well, about the people that seen the UFO, I only talked to one woman because most of the people, they have their lips sealed. They won't tell you anything about their names. Because I guess the men in black and the military was there harassing people to get their names. So the few people that know their names, they will not tell you. But anyway, so this man said that there was about between 5 or 10 people climbing on this UFO, and I guess most of them were managed to get away before the military had got there. But I guess the object, he said it looked, it was silvery, but he said it looked liquidy, like it was wet. Like whatever the object was, he said it looked like it had water, like dripping off it or pouring off it. So I don't know exactly what that is, or if it's just moisture from being in the atmosphere or whatever. But he said that it looked liquidy, and it looked very smooth. He said you couldn't see a dent in it. You couldn't see windows. It was no sort of markings on it or anything.
That's an interesting way to describe it. You said smooth and liquidy?
That's the exact term. He said it looked liquidy, almost as if it was wet or it had water pouring down the side of it. But the guy also didn't get out of the train to go walk up to it. But
can't say I blame him. Mm-hmm.
The woman told me the same, the similar description. She said that when you climbed on it, you would slip and slide, almost as if it was covered in a type of slime. But so where this object had crashed, I'd like to tell you nowadays, there's no plant life or no nothing grows in this area where this thing had hit.
All right, so that the implication of that is you have been on that exact site, yes?
Yes, I actually have a website I made recently, a couple days ago. I actually have pictures of me and my best friend in that crater where there's nothing growing, actually.
Crater?
Yeah, it's a crater. It's weird. If you look on MapQuest, you could actually see it from the sky.
A crater, okay. Now you're talking. These photographs that you took, do you have them?
Yeah, I have them all on saved to my computer. I put some of them up on my website, but if you would like more, I can email them to you right now if you want.
Don't email them to me. Email them to Keith Rowland, webmaster@artbell.com.
All right, I'll send over.
All you've got to do is put webmaster@artbell.com. Okay.
All right.
We would obviously love to see the photographs. I didn't know you had these. That's going to be very helpful.
I also have pictures of the physical evidence I was given, too.
Oh, do you now?
And I have pictures of magnets sticking to it. And I'd like to tell you, I brought these strange samples to several, about between 5 and 7 geologists.
Yes.
And a lot of them worked at the mines up in the area, and none of them could tell me what these are.
Okay, back up. You keep surprising me. Now you're saying you have physical samples. So you went up to this area, and how did you get your hands on physical samples of whatever we're talking about here?
Well, originally I had gone to the town of Ruth because that's where I thought the original UFO crash had been from. Where was that?
Right.
I was given a rock. It looks almost, I don't know if you know what hematite is, but it looks similar to this rock called hematite. I'm holding this in my hand as I'm telling you. And this rock, it's dark colored, almost like a dark brown or a black. Almost looks like a lava rock.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like the color of a lava rock. It's smooth, and it's magnetized. Like if you put a magnet near it, it'll stick to the magnet.
Okay.
I don't try not to put it near electronics, so I don't want to ruin my electronics if I have it, but
smart move. So this is you're characterizing it as a rock.
Yes, I was told that this is that stuff that was dripping off of the UFO.
Oh,
hardened. They collect a sample of it and it's hardened over time.
Okay,
that's what this is.
You never saw it in any other condition other than hard, right?
I've never seen it in any other condition other than hard, but I was given the same exact rock from the UFO landing site from the 1970s and from the 1952 Southern crash site, the same exact rocks.
Really? And so this was stuff that was dripping off the side of the craft that then hardened. And
yes.
To be specific, this was given to you by somebody up there?
A local historian in the town of Roos.
A local historian. How did you discover that it had magnetic qualities to it?
The woman actually told me about it when she gave it to me. I guess she was playing around with it before she gave it to us. And this woman had about 5 or 6 of these rocks. She just gave me one of them, and the other one that we found on our own at the crash site.
More and more interesting. Okay. Now, you did say a little while ago, at one point,
before the military came, I believe is what you said. So the military did eventually get there, correct?
Yes. Well, anyway, so the people are climbing around on this UFO.
Yes.
And I guess he said after about an hour or two, he said they're sitting in this train. They had no idea what was going on, I guess, at this point in time. Well, he said that eventually several military vehicles, he didn't say exactly what kind of vehicles, but he said that military vehicles of some sort had driven up to the site, and they were told, they told everybody to get off of the train, that they were driving them back to Ely. But he didn't exactly say where they were going to take them in Ely. So he, they took them to Ely, to the police station of all places, and he said they were interrogated by these people.
Huh.
Well, he said they do not know what happened to the train. There's no records of the train ever arriving in Ely or the town of McGill, which is the next big train station going north. And
wow.
North of that, there's a town called Cobrie, and it wasn't ever reported to be there either. So, anyways, I told you we had gone to the north, the Nevada Northern Railway Museum, which is right in the heart of Ely, and we were looking at the old reports from the train conductors and from the engineers and all that. Well, we had found a report that says that a train was going towards McGill coming from Ely. And they said that this train, one boxcar was derailed, is what the report says. It says nothing about a UFO, but it does say that 48 feet of track was damaged. And the museum, I don't call him the curator or the head honcho at the museum, Sean Pitts, he was very surprised that this had happened. Because he told me he had never heard of any tracks being damaged in that sort of length or that. He's been there for years and years, and he's never heard of anything similar to that. So anyways, the tracks come in 16-foot sections, and that would be, what, like three or four sections?
Sure.
Something like that. So three or four sections of track were damaged.
Bent like pretzels.
And it doesn't say what happened. It has the same exact word. It says the people were taken off the train by an official. It doesn't say who. It just says an official. They were taken off the train and brought back to Ely. Well, it doesn't say where they were brought back to in either. They weren't brought back to the train station. And it doesn't say what happened to the train, because in the arrival part of the log, it doesn't say where it arrived. It just says when it left. So
I wonder if they were taken back to Ely and put in some sort of auditorium-type atmosphere and instructed that they had just seen nothing.
Well, the guy that was on the train didn't get into detail on what exactly they were questioning about. He just told me that he was questioned, because like, the guy started getting kind of scared when I started mentioning that I was going to be up there in a few weeks and I wanted to talk to him. So the guy got kind of scared. But
really?
So anyways, we found documentation at the Railroad Museum basically saying word for word what this guy had told us on the phone related to the UFO crash. So anyways, I'd asked the curator at the museum how because I didn't know. I said, how do you move a train? Like, how do you move a train, or what's the process go? He said that there's two ways. You can either take a giant crane from another train on the track and move it physically, like pick the whole thing up and move it.
Right.
The other way, he said, is that you have to take the train apart into several sections and then transport it that way. Well,
so either way, it would have been a really big deal.
Yeah. So the military ended up closing off that road I was telling you at the freeway that runs by there. And anyway, so they closed off this highway, and he said that they had, this was from one of the military men that was on the site. He told me they had brought the biggest crane in the county to pick this thing up. So it's a pretty big object. They got the biggest crane in the country to pick, not the country, the county, and he didn't exactly say what kind of crane it was or how big it was, but I'm assuming pretty big. I asked him the question about helicopters, if there was a helicopter involved. I guess the helicopters at that point in time weren't like they are nowadays. They weren't good enough to pick the object up and carry it like you could now.
Right.
But so anyways, I guess they put it on a giant flatbed truck and they drove it south. didn't exactly say where to the south, but I know Area 51 to the south. I guess maybe they could have brought it there, but
that would be a logical. Yeah, that certainly would be a logical place to take it. All right, hold tight. My guest is Jeremy Meter, and he's got an awful lot of information about a crash that didn't happen. Except, of course, it sounds like it really did.
Dark Matter with Art Bell. To join the show, please call 1-855-REAL-UFO. That's 1-855-732-5836.
And this is the Area of 51.
Evening, everybody.
Jeremy Meter is my guest. Now, what you're hearing about is very interesting because it really sounds, for all the world to me, just like a Roswell, only here in Nevada and little known. But obviously there is some serious amount of evidence to go along with this. And by the way, on that note, it's my understanding Jeremy is emailing a couple of segments of photographs to my webmaster, Keith Rowland, and we'll get them up for you. That may identify the location. Jeremy, you're back on the air again.
Yeah, I'm sending you the pictures on about two or three separate emails because they won't let me send them all at once for some reason.
That's fine. That's fine. The emails, or the photographs, I should say, are going to be of this material, number one, right?
Yes.
And number two, of you standing at this, well, you called it a indentation in the ground, a crash site, actually, right?
Yes, they're actually of the, I call it a crater. It looks like a crater, like a hole in the side of the mountain.
All right.
And
so
the pictures also are, there's some of them are of a, I guess you could call it a base of some sort, a government base that was put in, that was made around the crash site. I'll get into that in a minute.
A base made around the, okay, go ahead.
Well, it gets weirder. In 1955, I think it was, yeah, 3 years later, the government actually built a, I guess you could call it, it's called Project High Range. What it was supposedly was to track and monitor the X-15 rocket plane, which is a plane that could take off like a conventional airplane
right. And
land on a runway like a normal airplane could. Well, once the X-15 spy plane, they stopped doing that, they start using these bases to monitor UFOs and UFO tracking activity, supposedly. Because I guess from workers that worked there in the 70s, they were saying that the government, what they saw in the military, was if a UFO had crashed here in the past, maybe they would come back in the future, was their way of thinking at the time.
Isn't that interesting?
I talked to Harry Drew and the Kingman UFO crash, and he said that there was radar tracking towers built there. That was, I believe, a couple years after this.
Do you have any idea why they would have it set in their minds that if a UFO had crashed once, it would likely there'd be another?
Well, I guess in the past they thought that if one UFO had been there, there had been another, or there would be another. They were thinking this because, I guess in the past, I don't know if it was Roswell or something, they were getting heavy UFO activity in the area where another UFO had crashed in the past. I think they were saying it came from, I think Kecksburg was what the guy was saying. But these radar towers, they built them on three mountains overlooking Ely. Ironically, is where the main station was put, where they were seeing those aliens on the mountain, and it's overlooking the crash site, of the southern crash site. So, I don't know if that's just a coincidence. I kind of think not, but...
Okay.
Anyway,
You've said that you have had run-ins with men in black while you were doing research on this crash.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, well, please elaborate. What has happened? You know, I love first-person stuff, so if something happened to you, I want to know about it.
Oh, yeah, well, we had gone up to one of these sites, the one on Squaw Peak. You can go there now, but I guess it's not recommended that you go up there because they probably don't like that. And they have the sign that says you could be shot for going up there and things like that. But I'll send you a picture of that sign, too, so... When you get the emails, you'll see that. Well, so we went up on this mountain, and it says in a 1978 newspaper article on microfilm that they had demolished the base, but they had kept a couple trailers up there on top of Squaw Peak. Well, if you go up there nowadays, there are a couple trailers up there. There are a couple trailers, and it used to be a big, giant radar dish, I guess. I don't exactly know how big it was. They're supposed to be one of the biggest ones in the state at the time. Well, they had this big radar dish on top of there. You could see the stand is still there. I actually sent you pictures of the base on top of the mountain, too.
Okay.
Well, it says two of the emails went through, so you should have two of those right now.
Okay. It'll take a few minutes for Keith to get them up there. But anyway, go ahead. You're going to tell us about Men in Black.
Yeah, I will. So anyway, so we went up to this base on top of this mountain, and... There are a couple of trailers still up there with modern-day radar dishes on top of them. They're not huge things, but they're still there. And you could hear the hum of electronics coming from the trailers. Like, they still use it for something. I don't know what. But these were supposedly the trailers that these men were working in to track UFOs, the same exact one. You could tell the trailers are from the 1950s or 60s, judging by the style of the trailers. So I have some of those pictures of the trailers in the email I sent to you.
Okay.
So anyways... I guess somebody didn't like us going up there to that radar tower up on top of that mountain. Because, let me start. We've had run-ins with the government or Men in Black at least, I'd say, three different times. The first time, I'm going to get to the best one for last. The first time was when I first found out about the Hill Air Force base being involved with the cleanup. And the spotting of UFO, I actually, this wasn't a very smart thing to do, but I called Hill Air Force Base and left them emails, and finally somebody called me. And he was a base historian. He actually called our, I used to have a landline. They called our old landline, and I never gave him that number. So anyway, so he called our phone, and at the time, I'd like to mention, by the way, I'm in my mid-20s. At the time, I was only like, I don't know, like 20 or 21, whatever. So anyways, a man from Hill Air Force Base had called the house, and he was asking me questions about UFOs and things like that, just like common knowledge.
Just out of the blue?
So, yeah, out of the blue. The Hill Air Force Base called me, and the guy was asking me about Roswell and weird, I guess, testing my knowledge on UFOs to see how well I was into it. He asked for I went to CSN, the College of Southern Nevada at the time. He asked me for all of my teachers' names for some reason and my student number. I don't know why. So But anyway, so then after
Wait a minute. Hold on, Jeremy. He represented himself to be who from where?
I have my notes right here, actually. He said that he was some sort of a historian. He never gave me his name. He said he was a base historian at Hill Air Force Base. He told me that in the 1940s and 1950s, there were a supply and maintenance depot for Nellis Air Force Base and the other ones in the area. But the Project Blue Book, I'm getting tongue-tied. They clearly said in Project Blue Book in black and white that Hill Air Force Base picked up the pieces of the UFO and that they were sent out, basically.
Okay.
Because it said that they had planes circling the area and things like that. Well, anyway, so this guy calls me. He's asking me questions. For some reason, he was asking me questions about my college and things I was doing in college. I don't know if that's trying to not make it sound weird to me at the time or not. But so, anyways, he starts asking me, okay, well, what specifically do you want to know about? And I actually got, I guess you call it, nerves of steel. And I asked him, okay, well, I'm doing a case involving a crash. He goes, what kind of crash? And I go, a strange one. And you could tell the guy, you could tell he was smiling on the other side of the line. He kind of chuckled, and he was like, well, what kind of strange crashes? And I said, one that happened near Ely, Nevada in 1952. And the guy goes, those types of crashes are classified. But if you want to know about it, you could come down to the base, and we will talk to you about it. And knowing I didn't go down to the base. I didn't want to know what was going to happen if I went down to the base, so whether they were going to do something or not. But.
Well, yeah, I understand completely. I probably would not have gone either.
They called my phone a couple more times asking me more questions about airplane crashes and kind of more UFO questions.
Really?
And they never really said, they never told me why they were asking me this. I kind of just answered their questions because Nellis Air Force Base is right down the road, and I'd rather them not come to the house in person and ask me.
Right. So you would classify these people as men in black on the phone?
That was the military. The men in black story, the more interesting ones I'm getting towards now.
All right.
Well, on the last time we went to Ely, which was back in May, me and my best friend were, this was one of the first times we went to the crash site. We had got these rocks and we were out cruising around. Well, we were actually filming videos that we were going to put on a short documentary we're planning on making. And on my best friend's camera, you could see that there's the blacked out vans are in the background with the people sitting, and they didn't get out of the vans, but they showed up at several of our filming locations. And this area is very remote. I said, like, Ely is the biggest town for 200 miles in any direction. So what are the chances they would follow us to small towns? And I'd like to tell you, most of these towns are like an hour or two apart. So it's pretty long distance for these people to be showing up. That was concerning, but that's not the weirdest one. I guess it was back around 2011. Me and my best friend and my brother were actually going to get ready to take one of our trips to Ely. And we were going to interview a lady that lived in Ely. I guess she had seen something like the craft being transported through town or something.
Right.
So anyways, the woman called me on a Thursday or a Friday. We were supposed to leave on a Saturday. And the woman says, oh, well, I'd like to thank Jeremy and Nick, which is me and my best friend. I'd like to thank you guys for coming and doing an interview today. Your paranormal group is very professional. And she starts describing this interview. And I told her, I was like, oh, well, that's interesting and all, but we didn't go up there. We're still in Las Vegas. And she swore up and down that me and my best friend came to her house. Well, she described it as two men in black suits got out of a blacked out van, and they knew all about, like, where I went to college, my friend Nick's life in Ohio before I moved to Las Vegas. And I guess we're having small talk about our lives, and their facts were right on. I don't know who these people are, but she described them basically is your typical Men in Black impression, or like what you would think of the Men in Black. And I guess they conducted some sort of interview, and the lady got so scared when I said that it wasn't us that she never talked to us again. So I have no idea what that was, but I guess nobody else that we've wanted to interview has had people like that show up. But we have talked to people that have been seen the men in black come to their house and threaten them within the last few years, too.
Threaten?
Yes. There was a man named Claude House. He's actually on that video that you have on your website.
Right.
He was talking to the Channel 8 News in Reno. I think that video is from 07 or 06. He was telling his story about what he had seen or what he thinks he remembered. Well, I was told by a couple of the locals to go call him because I guess him and his brother were young at the time, but they had seen something. I called him. I called Mr. House, and he told me, oh, I'll be glad to do an interview with you. And I said, okay, it's a paranormal interview is what I described it as. And he was like, okay, let's do the interview. So I called him on the phone to try to get like a pre-screening before I actually drove up to where he lives. And this man, he was like, okay, well, what do you want to ask me? And I told him, okay, well, we're doing a story on UFOs and this and that. And all of a sudden I told him, okay, well, tell me about the Ely UFO crash and what you know. This man, he did a 360. He went from calm to hysterics. This man started blubbering and crying. Like, I call it crying. It sounded like he was crying. He got very concerned. He told me, word for word, he said, they told me not to talk about it. They told me that I'm in danger if I tell you this. And he kept saying, they. I don't know who they is. But he said they came to his house, and they are monitoring him in his phone calls, I guess. And he was pretty scared.
Well, that sounds like MIB. All right, so you said you're now in your mid-20s, right?
Yeah.
When did you begin investigating this? How long have you been at it?
Since about 07 or 08, so that's...
Long time.
Since I was about 18, 19?
Yeah, that's a long time. So you've been at this a long time, and you've gained the kind of gained the trust of the people there.
Yeah. I've talked to several people that had that seen that 1970s thing I was telling you about, and several of those people said that in the 1970s that the men in black were in town knocking on people's doors. Like, I guess you call them MPs. Some people have started as military police. Some people call them men in black. But I guess he said that they had their handguns on their side. That's clearly what one of the women said. That they had handguns on their side, and they were going door to door in that town of Ruth.
Were they in uniform?
Yeah.
Probably MPs, sounds like.
And I guess he said they were asking for information. I don't know if you want me to tell you the story of the 1970s thing here, if you want me to finish up on 1952 first.
Well, let's finish with what we've got.
All right, well, so the men in black were in, they're still interested in it, or the military's still interested, because back, I guess as soon as the last 5 or 6 years, they were talking to some of the people that went to the media or were online talking about it. I talked to Ed Pierce, the guy that made that video, the news anchor. He said he hadn't seen anything weird or had anybody come up to him, so I don't know if it's just certain people or whatnot. But somebody was impersonating me and my best friend, I don't know who, and they were calling the military base, Hill Air Force Base, was calling me and asking me questions. I don't know what that had to do with anything, but it's weird.
All right, Pat sent me a message here that says the kid, that'd be you, is backing into the most interesting material. It's getting better. At first, I thought he was just reading Wikipedia. Now, he's like, oh, and I've got a physical sample of some unknown material. Wow.
Yeah.
So what have you done with this material? Have you had it tested?
I haven't brought it to a laboratory because they want a lot of money they want like thousands of dollars, I was told, by some of the geologists that work for, it's called the Robinson Mine, which is that big copper mine I was telling you about. I guess they employ 500 employees in the Ely area, and a lot of them are geologists. We talked to three geologists from the mine. They gave the same kind of testing they do on the rocks at the mine. They were scratching it with knives, looking at the color, holding up to different types of charts and things. They said that it's the closest thing that it's related to is hematite, but I guess they said that it's not exactly like hematite, but that's what it's similar to. That's one rock sample. The other one, that I don't have in my possession, I was shown twice. Well, this sample, it was yellow, almost like a bumblebee color, like what you picture a bumblebee, like yellow. It was a bright yellow color, but it was hollow in the center. It felt like it was hollow or like a honeycomb type of texture. And if you tapped it on a desk, you could feel that it wasn't so it was hollow. Well, the townspeople, the two people that showed us the samples wouldn't tell us where they got this from. But we also talked to those geologists and showed them pictures of the sample. And I also sent you pictures of it, too. But nobody could tell us exactly what that is. We talked to a man that worked at the smelters in the town of McGill, which is near the next town up from Ely going north. And he said that he dealt with sulfur for years and years working at the smelters. And he said that he didn't think that it was sulfur. So I don't know what that sample is. But...
Generally, Jeremy, I've found that if you have a sample of something that is really anomalous, I can guarantee you that somebody will come along, Linda Moulton Howe or somebody at that level who is interested in real science, and if they find that it's anomalous, they will get it to the right labs, I can promise you.
I know, I think they wanted like $3,000 or something like that to look at a similar sample from the Kingman UFO crash. I know he said he paid for it out of pocket. So after hearing that, I didn't even think I
could. Listen, make no mistake, Jeremy. It's going to cost money to get it tested. What I'm saying, though, is if what you have is really anomalous, trust me, the people who count will find a way to get the money to get it done. No problem.
Yeah.
Are you willing to allow the sample to be tested?
I'm willing to get it tested. I just don't know if I want to give away the whole sample. I'll give like half of it or something.
That'd be fine.
I want at least a piece of it to keep for myself.
That'd be fine. I've received similar material, Jeremy, and I did exactly that. I kind of pieced it out for testing. And you'll hear a future show we'll do with Linda Moulton Howe that will give you some of the results from that testing. At any rate, let me assure you, as we go into a break, that it can be tested, that the right people will come along and test it for you.
Ain't got no trouble in my life, no foolish dream to make me cry.
Like SiriusXM is all around you. To beam up with us, please dial 1-855-REAL-UFO. That's 1-855-732-5836.
All right, good evening. My guest is Jeremy Meter from Las Vegas, and he has been investigating a alleged crash in Ely, Nevada, back in 1952, July 7th of 1952. Now, thus far, we're talking about witnesses who have seen what? Aliens with pincers? There were possibly as many as 16 bodies. He has had a Men in Black sort of experience on the phone, I would say, more than in person. He has interviewed people who actually saw other people, and I, you know, some of this is pretty important eyewitness stuff, actually crawling on a UFO. Crawling on a UFO. It destroyed some train tracks, turned them into virtual pretzels, he said. It's coming out in sort of starts and stops and spurts, the story, that is. But when you consider the totality of the story, and you consider that there is actual physical evidence to be examined, as well as a crash site, it adds up to quite a story. Now, it is coming out sort of in somewhat disjointed pieces, and some of that may be my fault for asking early questions, or questions that should be asked later, early, however you want to look at it, I don't know. Jeremy, welcome back. Now, the totality of your story is significant, and it seems to me that it's so significant that MUFON or some other very large organization should move in based on just what you found and the witnesses you've talked to and conduct a real downtown investigation. What do you think?
I actually contacted MUFON, and they weren't interested. I already sent them four or five emails talking about my material, and
really?
They haven't showed any interest.
Did they say why?
I don't really know. I don't know if they don't believe me or what. I know I talked to Stanton Friedman and him all. I talked to him all the time about it. He finds it really interesting, I guess. I don't know. I don't recall what the Nevada chapter's leader, what his name is, but I sent him a couple emails. There's like a secondary email on their website. I wrote them, and they never really replied back. So I don't know. It seems like they're not very interested, or I don't know exactly what's going on.
Has anybody, in a real investigation, for example, Jeremy, you would bring an artist or some sort of artist to a witness, and you would say, look, what did this creature look like? And you would attempt to do an artist drawing. You would do, you know, the normal stuff that investigators do. Has there been any representation to you like that? Anybody who's drawn what they saw?
Nobody's drawn anything.
Nobody.
Every time I usually ask if I could have them draw a sketch or if I could have them talk on camera, most of the time, I don't have any sketches, by the way, but most of the time they're afraid that somebody's going to contact them or, I don't know, most of the time they don't want to have their story out to the public a lot of the time.
Okay. Yeah, I do understand that. People are very reluctant to talk about this kind of thing, and for probably pretty good reason, but gosh. It just begs to have more investigation. I guess you've been doggedly pursuing it, right?
Oh, yeah. I pretty much eat, sleep, and breathe, Amy, for the most part. Yes. What else was I going to say? I found the story to be really interesting. I'm kind of surprised that nobody else has really found anything like nearly what I found. I don't know why. I don't know if very many people haven't tried to find it or if they just looked for that one specific time frame in August or what the deal is.
You said in August?
Well, they said it was August on the internet, but it happened in July. This is the 1952 incident. So I don't know if they were all looking in August, and that's why they kind of gave up if it wasn't in August or what the deal was.
Well, 1952 is a long time ago in one way and not very long in another way. As I mentioned, you know, if people have seen creatures, people have been climbing on a UFO, these are things that would be passed down through generations. And there'd be a story. Let me just sit on my knee here and I'm going to tell you about the time I climbed on a UFO. That kind of thing. So those stories really are going to be around. Now, you've heard some of them, but holy mackerel, this is a pretty big deal. And Jeremy, did the military, when they did come in, Did they cordon off the area? What did they do? You told me about the train. What about the craft itself and so forth?
Well, I know they picked up the craft with a giant crane, and they hauled out the craft. He said that I guess they weren't allowed to go back to work on the railroad for I don't know how long. He didn't really say. He said they weren't allowed to go back to work for a while. Mm-hmm. So I guess they stopped the train going through. Claude House, the man that got scared when we asked him about UFOs, and his story that he actually told Ed Pierce of the Reno News, he said that the actual freeway was cordoned off. So from judging by that, I never heard anybody else say that the freeway was cordoned off. I don't see why it wouldn't be, but I guess apparently they kept the people out of the area at least on the railroad. And judging by Claude's story, apparently they closed down the highway too.
Okay.
As he said that many people say that they were told that a small plane had crashed in the area. Is what they were telling everybody.
That'd be the usual story, sure.
So, I don't exactly know how long they kept that story up, but like I said, it wasn't reported in the newspapers, so I don't exactly know how they were getting that message out at the same time.
Okay. Have you pretty much stuck with the Ely crash, or have you been involved in ufology otherwise?
Well, funny story, really. There's a place called Mount Potosi. It's right outside Las Vegas. It's in between Pahrump and Las Vegas. I guess it's called Potosi.
I can walk out of my studio and look at Potosi if the sun was up.
Oh, well. Mount Potosi has, I guess there's a lot of UFO stories coming from Mount Potosi. I actually had a weird experience. What got me involved in ufology was when I was about 11 years old, I was in Scouts. And we went on this night hike in Mount Potosi because there's a Boy Scout camp up there. It's close to the public. But we were on this night hike in the woods, and we went around this corner, and on this straightaway, I guess off to our left, ironically, like off to our left, there was some kind of an object that was sitting on the ground. It looked like the end of a boat. Like a point, but it's coming off of an egg-shaped craft. It was sitting on three stilt-looking legs.
Right.
And me, my mom, and three other scouts and their moms actually walked past this craft. I didn't think nothing of it at the time until the next morning when we came back and the thing was gone. But you could see three indentations in the ground where this thing was sitting. I firmly believe that it was a UFO. I mean, you could argue that it wasn't, but I think that it was personally, and that's what got me interested in ufology.
All right. Well, anyway, with regard to the crash in Ely, mm-hmm. coming back to that for a second, we've covered where it happened, when it happened. Of course, we can't know what became of the creatures. We can't know what became of the craft itself.
Well, I could tell you a little bit about what happened to the creatures.
All right. Please do.
All right. Well, Searching through the archives and the old newspapers, we came across on July 10th, I think it was the Oregon newspaper or the Elko, Nevada newspaper, one of the two. It says that, this is a casual article, mind you, out of the middle of nowhere, they say, oh, well, the aliens that were brought to the Ely police station were shaved chimps. No need to worry. It was about like a one paragraph long message. It didn't have any pictures. It didn't say anything else. That all of what it said was, the aliens that were brought to the police station were chimps. No need to worry. So apparently the military or the police or somebody rounded up some of those living aliens I was telling you about and brought them down to the police station. But really? That's I thought that was weird because it was dated July 10th, which is 3 days after the actual crash happened.
Now, is there any record at all of an alien being rounded up, as you put it, and brought in? You would think definitely that would be something the police would note. You know, alien walks in, got to make a report here. I think we just got cut off. I'm sorry to hear that. That was Jeremy Meter. And obviously we've lost him, so
It's a lesson in telephonics, folks. When we book our guests, we try and make absolutely certain that they're on a landline phone for a whole lot of good reasons. One of them was just demonstrated by that click you heard. That was his phone going away. So I don't know what to make of all of this. How about you? Obviously, we've got a youngster here telling us a story that he's collected from a number, a whole bunch of eyewitnesses, right? And he's got a little bit of physical evidence of some sort. He's got some photographs, which, by the way, Keith Rowland still does not have. And I think we might have Jeremy back in the line. Jeremy, are you there?
Yeah, I'm on.
This is why we don't like cell phones, Jeremy.
sorry about that. I'm putting the pictures up on a private website. I could send you the link to also if you want.
Now, wait a moment. Wait a moment. Mm-hmm. I thought you were sending them to webmaster@artbell.com.
I did send them. It says that they went through at... One second, it's loading.
Because I checked with Keith in our last break, and he had not yet received anything.
Is there any way you could have Keith email me first, and I reply to him and send it that way?
Well, it's not too complicated, Jeremy. It's webmaster@artbell.com.
At 8:41 and 8:25, it says that they were sent through.
They were sent through. So you didn't get a bounce.
I didn't get a bounce. But just in case I upload them to a website I could send you the link to, and you could do it that way. I don't know if that would be easier.
Well, at this point, it's not easy at all. Where did you send the? Are these photographs on the web now?
Yeah, right now. I'm putting them up right now.
You're putting them up now?
I'm publishing it right now.
And where are they going to be, Jeremy?
It's EelyUFOCrash.webs.com.
EelyUFOCrash?
Yep. And then a period, and then WEBS.com.
I think I've got it. That's Ely. Hold on a second, Jeremy. Ely UFO crash. Period.
Yeah.
WEBS.com.
Yeah.
Okay. That means we'll get them eventually.
And it says that it was published right like a couple seconds ago, so it should be on there.
All right.
Right now.
All right, Jeremy. Is there anything else about this story? From the Men in Black encounter to the actual material evidence you have to the eyewitness reports that you have not told me about yet, anything really important that we need to get on the air?
I'm thinking real quick. Well, I talked to the Meteorology Society in Nevada for that day, and they said that there was clear skies, and it wasn't a meteor. Because some people say that the blue gas behind it could have been a meteor. Well, they said that this couldn't have been a meteor because it was doing twists and turns and it was being sighted for a while. And I guess the one to the north, like I said, started a forest fire. And it's getting tongue-tied here. The society was saying that when meteors crash to the ground, they're cold to the touch, like you could pick them up. And these both started fires.
Okay, well, they're not, of course, going to be cold to the touch after they've traversed the atmosphere. They're going to be very, very hot, right?
Yeah, they were saying that the descriptions of it they were similar to a meteor, but not exactly. Well, something I would like to say was the crash in the 1970s or the UFO landing is separate from the 1950s incident. And the video that was on your website that the news station did, that's actually a combination of both kind of put into one. Their facts are kind of mixed up on there.
Okay. All right, so they didn't quite get it right.
Yeah. Well, something else I'd like to mention is civilians and Project Blue Book both say that there was B-36 bombers flying low over the crash sites, like right after they happened, I guess. The one to the north sooner than the one to the south, but I guess there were these B-36s flying around. circling the area. That's something else I found was pretty interesting.
All right. Is there anything further to be seen up there? If somebody goes into the Ely area now and finds the site that you talked about, are there still are there still things to be picked up and to be seen?
If you go to the site that's near McGill and Cherry Creek, there are rocks similar to the one that I was given out there. I didn't want to take all of them, but there are similar rocks out there. I don't know.
Okay, we're kind of having trouble with our connection now. You still there? No. We've lost Jeremy again. So, sorry about that, Jeremy. I think we're going to call it at this point, and we're going to go to unscreened open lines. So go ahead and back there in Washington, open up the lines, and we'll give out the number, and we'll just go to unscreened open lines. Now, obviously, we just had a youngster on the air. And a very enthusiastic youngster on the air. He's been looking at this for some time. I think probably he's on to something. I don't know what. I do know that the physical evidence should be examined. There should be people who would go and speak to the witnesses and get some sort of description of what the creatures looked like. There would need to be a very great deal of follow-up to all of this for us to get it right. So I'm going to open up the lines right now, and we're just going to take some open line calls, and you can talk about anything you want to talk about. If you want to comment on what Jeremy said, you're welcome to do it. Now, I will specify right at the top here that Jeremy didn't quite have it together in the sense that he kind of, I don't know, jumped around a little bit in the story, which made it difficult to understand on top of the bad line, but there's something here. Obviously, there's something here. So, if you'd like to call us, if you'd like to get on the air, remember, if you want to wish me well, wish me back, it's Roswell's, please. The number is 855-REAL-UFO. That's 855-732-5836. And with that in mind, let's do it. Unscreened open lines. Dark Matter, you're on the air.
Hello, my name is Teresa Freilicher.
All right, Teresa, turn your radio off, please.
Yes, I just did.
Okay, excellent.
And am I speaking with Mr. Art Bell?
You are.
Oh, okay. I just sent you a message via the wormhole explaining, trying to tell you about an episode that happened in the late 50s. There were three of us, Mary Jane Robinson, her mother Dorothy Robinson, and myself, in rural Pennsylvania, Shippensburg. And we went shopping at a mall. Mary was getting ready to go to nursing school, and she was buying a few things. And the stores closed at 10, and we were coming back to Shippensburg, and Mary hated driving on the Interstate 81, so we always took the rural back roads. And it was a perfectly clear night, a million stars visible, and some moonlight, and it was just, you know, a lovely drive. And out of nowhere, there were these lights that came up behind us, and Mary thought somebody wanted to pay us, and she put her arm up out and, you know, and said, pay us, pay us, and she slowed down, and they didn't pay us. And but they were close, and it was annoying her, so she stopped the car, and she said, I want to find out what's going on. And her mother said, Mary, don't get out of this car. Don't just stop. Let them go. Ignore them. And she said, no. She said, maybe something's wrong. Ever the caregiver, the nurse, Mary. Mm-hmm. So, and I was in the back seat.
Sounds just like a scene out of Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
No, it wasn't. No, I don't think it was. But at any rate, I got out of the car as well, and I'm like, I guess Mary was 18, and I was 14. So I got out of the car also, and so I was on the passenger side of the car. Mary was on the driver's side of the car, and she walked to the rear of the car, and I was already pretty much there. And there was this object, and there was no lights at this time. When we stopped and got out of the car, the lights were gone. And you couldn't even see where there had been headlights or anything. It was perfectly smooth. And I'll tell you what triggered this. The other night, last night, when you had the guy on who said that the object that he saw that was black was like a, what did he describe it as? Shoot. But at any rate, it wasn't square. It wasn't oblong or like a hot dog or anything like that, but it sort of had a rise in the center from the top as though it rose. The bottom appeared to be flat, and the sides were curved but very smooth.
So you're saying it was a craft.
It was a craft. Yes, it was a craft.
Of some sort. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So, but there was not a sound at all, Mr. Bell. Not an engine, not a hum, not a nothing. Absolutely.
All right. So there are the two of you are standing there looking at this craft, and
right. You
should have been scared out of your minds at that point.
Well, no, because we didn't feel threatened. I mean, I actually touched it.
Really?
And, I mean, I was so fascinated with it because I didn't know what it was made of. And in later years, I came to realize or think that it was like titanium. It was perfectly black, and the moonlight made it look shiny. But it was
okay,
so
well, we don't have a lot of time here. So what happened? Did it take off? Did you take off or what?
No, we did not take off. And Mary's saying, hello, did you want to talk to us? I'm not afraid. And I said, no, I'm not afraid either. Would you like to speak to us? Would you like to ask us questions? We'd like to ask you questions. Don't be afraid. We're not afraid. Well, we're kids, you know.
I don't think I could have done that. Honestly, I don't.
Well, we did not feel. Now, Mary's mother is in the front street, in the front seat, crying hysterically. Get in the car. Get in the car. I don't like this. I'm frightened. And Mary says, Ma, shut up. And
all right, listen, we're about out of time here, but what did the craft take off, or did you just drive away?
This is the thing that was amazing. It just lifted straight up without making a sound, and then elevated as if to go up. But while it was with us, right in front of us, it wasn't, we weren't a foot from it. I mean, I could put my arm out and touch it. And it just lifted straight up and then sort of took off. And as it took off, lights around it started circling and different colors, and we could see people inside, and we waved goodbye.
People.
Well,
people creatures. As in creatures.
Yeah.
Not. Wait a minute. Wait. Human or non-human or non-human?
They were too far away, but they appeared to be somewhat human. They had heads, necks, shoulders, arms, and the one thing that Mary said was they don't have five fingers. And see, I wasn't looking at the fingers. And we were waving to them saying goodbye, and they waved back to us. The thing that's interesting is ever since that episode, I've been intuitive. I'm an intuitive.
Well, it obviously then affected you in some manner and may have set that off. I don't know. That's fascinating. There you have a first-hand account of what I would call close encounter of a third kind. Right? When you're that close, when you can put your hand on a craft, and when you can wave to the whatever they are is in there, I would say that's some kind of the third kind or whatever. Wow. Dark Matter, you're on the air. Hello.
Is this Art?
It is.
Art, my name's Mike. I'm in Virginia.
Hi.
I work the water on the Chesapeake Bay, and we constantly see strange objects flying in the sky. I've tried to videotape them, and none of them have ever appeared. on my videotape.
Well, unless you've got a really new camera and it's really good with low light, you're not going to get very much. It's really hard to take any video, meaningful video at night, and then end up with anything more than a light.
I don't even end up with light. That's the whole thing.
Really?
Nothing appears on the film or on the video at all.
Hmm. And you've done this how many times?
Oh, 5, 6, 7 times in the last year.
Wow.
It's just, we see all kinds of strange stuff out here at night, working the water. And we've tried to videotape it, and we can never get it to show up on the tape.
Well, I'll say this, and I've had two experiences. Both I think I've described to you at various times. And in both cases, I did not have a camera with me. In both cases, I was so shocked and so transfixed, you know, where I was, that I never would have thought of it. Never, never, never. It would be great to say, you know, I had a camera right there in the back seat. Could have grabbed it. Could have taken a picture. Could have had the proof. Wished I'd had the proof, but didn't. So, I do understand. Dark Matter, you're on the air.
Dark, is this you?
It is me, yes.
Oh, it's great to hear you back on the air.
Thank you.
So, no, I'm just curious, like, how do you, and talking in general, like, how do you not dispute everything going on here?
I don't know what you mean. How do I not dispute what's going on? What do you mean?
Oh no, sorry. Like, it's between pyramids and all this other stuff. It's this ancient alien thing. Doesn't that make complete sense?
Only if you put it in context. What are you saying? He's gone. I think he knew what he wanted to say. He just couldn't figure out how to say it. Dark Matter, you're on the air. Hi.
I don't know what you mean. How do I not dispute what's going on?
Yes.
Roswell. One thing about all these different crafts, and there's a lot of different descriptions, but if these aliens can come across hundreds of thousands of light years, couldn't they have the technology to navigate to our atmosphere? Why are they always crashing?
It's a very good question, and I guess the answer might be the only ones we get to talk about and see are the ones that have a problem. You know, if they don't have a problem, then they're up and gone.
Well, I guess I've got to have a problem every now and then. Now, maybe that craft that came back to look at the crash site was looking for survivors. Maybe it was a rescue mission.
Entirely possible, sure.
Hey, very, very good shows. I really enjoyed last week. Yeah, the professor was incredible there. So keep up the good work, Art. Thanks.
All right. Thank you very much. And take care. Of course, we had a couple of professors on, so I would assume that you're perhaps talking about Dr. Kaku. Dark Matter, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello. Is this the screener?
No, I don't have a screener.
Is this Art? I'm sorry, Art. Hey, I want to ask you a question.
Yes.
Are you going to have a show here recently about rods?
You're talking about Jose Escamilla, right?
Exactly. The rods that, you know, you see out of the corner of your eye.
Okay. Rods are not so much seen in the corner of your eye. Rods are actually able to be photographed.
I'm sorry. You're right. Actually, what I'm thinking about was the Shadow people.
Shadow people, yes. Exactly. They come to the corner of your eye. Rods.
Rods are the white streaks that you can.
Yeah, they're moving very quickly.
Exactly.
What is your point of view about that, sir? Do you think that rods are the real McCoy, or do you think they're? A lot of people say, for example, they're bugs.
No, Art. I've seen them 1,000 times. I mean, rods and shadow people, but the rods, I see them all the time. The white streaks in front of my eyes. I mean, I should see them. I don't know. I mean,
I think most people, I think most people do not see rods, that they're too quick for the eye. We all see a little thing that I think floats across our eye every now and then, if that's what you're talking about.
That may be an eye floater, yes.
Could be. All right. Thank you very much. But what he was really talking about, that's a whole nother subject, rods. Jose Escamilla is a very interesting guy. And he's put together, I think, absolute proof that these rods really do exist, that they are some sort of life form. And they can be photographed with very high-speed film. And he's got lots and lots of photographs, even video of rods. There's a particularly impressive one, which occurred in a cave. And these rods were flying all about this cave. It's really amazing. Anyway, listen, we're going to break here. We're in open lines now. And anything you want to talk about is fair game. I'm Art Bell, and this... this is Dark Matter.
Geosynchronous orbit at the speed of light. This is Dark Matter with Art Bell. To call Art, please light up the lines at 1-855-REAL-UFO. That's 1-855-732-5836.
You certainly are doing that. They're all lit up. Welcome back, everybody. My guest was Jeremy Meter. He talked about a UFO crash in Ely, Nevada, just north of me. Well, quite a bit north of me, but still here in Nevada, and I'd like to know a lot more about it. So if anybody has anything to contribute to the Jeremy Meter story, I'd love to get it so we can track this down. If it really is a Nevada UFO, if it really is a Nevada Roswell, I guess would be the way to put it, I definitely want to know more about it. So hopefully you'll get the information to me. I want to talk to you for a second about a wonderful, wonderful product. It's made by the Sea Crane Company. I love them because they do electronics, and you know me in electronics. I love electronics. It's the FM Transmitter 2. That means it's a generation above. It'll transmit audio to any nearby radio. If you've got it set up correctly, it will transmit audio anywhere in your house to any FM radio. It is an FM transmitter. You connect it to your satellite radio or maybe your iPhone, your iPad, your iPod, smartphone, doesn't matter, any audio source, and you get this transmitted near broadcast quality stereo audio. Now, that's really important. Near broadcast quality. It really is extremely good. Rated to transmit up to 45 feet line of sight. But
Remember, do not attach a 30-inch wire for improved distance. Don't look on the internet for tips. It's powered by an included AC adapter, also runs on a couple AA batteries if you want it portable. It's you can put it on any frequency in the FM band, anywhere from 88.3 to 107.7. It's portable, fits in the palm of your hand, costs all of $59.95. If you would like one of these, and believe me, you would, call C. Crane. You can call right now at 1-800-522-8863. Let me repeat the number because operators are there right now. 1-800-522-8863. You might ask for a catalog while you're at it. By the way, did you hear about the bombs that were dropped on North Carolina? These weren't any bombs. These were hydrogen bombs. Now, this occurred a long time ago, 1961, but we were just told about it. New document tells us. The B-52 apparently disintegrated in midair, and the hydrogen bombs dropped. They landed on North Carolina, not out in the ocean, but actually on North Carolina. Now, fortunately for us, there are four safety features on hydrogen bombs. Four. Three of them, you will be unhappy to hear, failed. That's right. Three of them failed. Only one tiny thing stood between, well, what happened, harmlessly falling to the ground, and hydrogen bombs, a couple hundred times more powerful than those that hit Hiroshima from going off. Do you know what that thing was? A little tiny safety switch. I think just a few volts. If the low voltage switch had gone, and that would have, that means just a few volts drop or a few volts added, either way, the hydrogen bomb would have gone off, and North Carolina would have basically disappeared, along with Maryland, Washington, South Carolina, probably Georgia. In other words, a very great deal of our East Coast would have gone up, you hesitate to say in smoke, but up in smoke, and that would have been it. And we're just now told about it back in 1961. Can you imagine that? Okay, let's go here and say, Dark Matter, you're on the air. Hello. Hello?
Yeah, hello.
Hi.
How are you? Good show tonight.
Thank you.
I used to, when I was a kid, I was pretty skeptical about this kind of stuff. You know, where UFOs at, ain't no such thing. One summer night, when I was 18, right out of high school, my old friend and I, we were, you know, doing what, you know, teenagers do, you know, getting into mischief.
Sure.
And we seen this big blue thing. One second, it's a dark sky. Next second, here's this big blue thing just sitting in front of us. You know, I'd stay there, well, less than a minute. And, I mean, all of a sudden, it was just gone.
When you say right in front of you, you mean really close or what?
I'd say it was, I mean, not right in front of us, but, I mean, it had a little bit of distance, but it just sat there. There was no sound, no nothing, just this big blue ball. And then all of a sudden, it was just gone. Well, after that, hell, I've been a believer ever since.
Well, there's nothing like having your own experience. And according to surveys, most Americans, I believe, have had their own experience. A majority of Americans have seen or been in close contact with something that they can't explain.
Yep. And we checked the papers and the news the next day. There was nothing reported. So my buddy and I, we decided, well, maybe we'll just sit on this and keep it to ourselves and not tell nobody about it.
Probably a wise decision. Thank you very much. Another thing that I would like to complain about or make note of, and that is that, you know, with social media now, everybody's on Facebook, right? Everybody's twitting about Twitter, all of these different, or on the computer. And when you're on the computer, when you're on Facebook, when you're doing the social media thing, you're not looking up. And that's one of the main reasons that people don't see UFOs. Take our sky here in Nevada. Very clear. On any given night, you can see the Milky Way from one horizon all the way to the other horizon. It's that clear. Millions of stars. And if you sit outside and spend a little less time on Facebook or your computer or whatever you're doing and actually look up, you're going to see something. Now, it may not be as dramatic as some of what you've heard about here, but you're going to see something. You'll just have to wait for a while. It may turn out to be a satellite. It may turn out to be an airplane. It may turn out to be something strange. And you may see a UFO. But one thing's for sure. If you're on Facebook, you're not going to see it. Dark Matter, you're on the air. Hello. Hello? Going once. Going twice. Gone. Dark Matter, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes, am I on the air?
You are.
Oh, wow. Art Bell, right?
Yes.
Oh, wow. Okay. I never expect I would be on the air, ever, actually.
Okay. Well, here you are.
All right. Awesome. Well, my name's Tony from Dallas, Texas.
Right.
And so I just wanted to give you pretty much calling about a paranormal experience I had last year at a cemetery in McKinney, Texas. It's in north of Dallas.
Okay. You said a paranormal experience, right?
That's correct.
And you're at a cemetery.
That's correct. Yeah, so basically me, my girlfriend, and a couple of other friends, too, we went out to the cemetery called Ross Cemetery in McKinney, Texas. So the crazy thing about it is usually I am a skeptic, but at the same time I can be a believer at the same time, but only if proof is right there presented in front of me, something that's undisputable. And definitely, I can definitely tell you tonight that I actually have definitive proof of an EVP that one of my friends actually captured, and I wasn't really too far.
Hold on. You have definitive proof of an ET that you captured?
Of an EVP.
Oh.
Of a voice.
Okay. All right.
Yeah,
all right, so you were in a graveyard and you had a recorder with you.
That's correct. Well, my friend had it recorded. It was actually from his cell phone, but you can actually hear it very well. Actually, I have uploaded it on a website sometime last week, because I've always been very scared. Honestly, that's the way I felt. I've always been kind of very scared, kind of shied away to see if I could. Putting out paranormal evidence out to my friends.
Okay, what you're talking about is, okay, you're talking about an electronic voice phenomenon. Do you have it with you right now?
Yes, I do. I can actually email you the link, whatever email I can send it to, or...
Just play it. Let me hear it.
Okay. All right, yeah, sure. Let me just grab it real quick.
Go ahead.
Give me
we're
going to
do it. Yeah, I'm waiting. I'll wait. We will do a show on EVP, electronic voice phenomena. And this man went to a graveyard, and apparently somebody had a recorder going on a phone and captured what you're about to hear.
All right, here it is. Right here. Let me just go ahead and skip over to the last minute, because it's a 3-minute and 39-second EVP, but let me go and skip over to the last minute of it, because you can definitely hear it. Look for something that says something, whispering, come out and play. Here it is.
All right.
And 3, 2, 1, here it is.
All I hear is hiss.
Did you hear that, Art?
No.
Let me try one more time for you.
Okay. All I heard was hiss.
Let's see.
Oh, I did hear it. I did hear it.
Again.
Yeah.
And it said it twice. And
yeah, it's a little hard to hear, but I heard it.
Bore me. Yeah, and then and that last part is my friend saying, you bore me. The crazy thing is that the cemetery is extremely old, very, very extremely old. I want to say we found graves going back to the 1700s, late 1700s on that. It's always scared me hearing this voice. It always gives me chills. I've always been somewhat of a skeptic, but at the same time, a believer. I guess you could say you could catch me in the middle, depending on if evidence is there, and I'm glad I've actually found this evidence.
I'm glad you did, too, and I'm glad you played it for us. Probably would have been better, you know, of course, directly coming over, but I could hear it. EVP has a long, rich history. I have some friends that we're going to have on the show. They have some family difficulty right now, but they're going to come on the show, and they've been playing EVP for years for me. And all it requires is a recorder. I guess you can use your phone. It doesn't matter if it's digital or if it's tape. And what you do is take it with you to, if you have the cojones for it, into a graveyard or a haunted place, and you let it run. And if you're lucky, I mean, that's what you want, and you're lucky, you will hear a voice telling you something. Now, I don't know where this comes from. What I do know is that it goes all the way back to Alexander Graham Bell. He was investigating this. He had voices that appeared on his recording mechanisms. And frankly, they're very, very scary sometimes. So if you want to play around with this kind of thing, it's better than a Ouija board and more fun to play with. You just start a recording going in a place that you think might be haunted and see what you get. Dark Matter, you're on the air. Hi.
Yeah, hey, Art. How are you doing?
Okay, sir.
I got a quick story. I was in California, and I was basically babysitting my mom's apartment. She had taken a week vacation to Las Vegas.
Right.
And I was laying on the couch watching TV, and she had a big mirror on a mantle above the fireplace. And I had the sliding glass door shut. You know, there was no wind. And the mirror, like, flew off about 3 or 4 feet, and it shattered. And it shattered with the mirror facing up. And it scared the heck out of me. And I called my mom in Vegas, and I said, hey, you know, the mirror just fell off. And she had gotten woken up, you know, basically at the same time hearing footsteps walking across, you know, by her bed. You know, so it was a weird, you know, thing at the same time, because I called her 30 seconds after the mirror had crashed, you know what I mean? And I figure, if, you know, if there was any wind, the mirror would have just went straight down off the
mantle. So what do you think it was?
I don't know. I spoke to a lady who does paranormal investigations, and she was saying that a lot of spirits are using mirrors as a portal.
Right.
And I was like, well, why would they break it? You know.
I wonder. Anyway, you know, I wonder what it is about a mirror that lends itself to paranormal occurrences. That's a very interesting question, actually.
Yeah, I'm not sure. And I've stayed at her house before, and like, it's just a small one-bedroom apartment, you know. And in the hallway between her room to the bathroom, I've seen, you know, dark figures, like, you know, shoot across the little entrance to get into the hallway, the little doorway. So I don't know what it was, but it's weird that crashed. And then I called her, and she got woken up by footsteps walking by her bed, and there was nobody there. You know, so it scared me, you know, so I couldn't go to sleep.
I understand completely. Thank you. What is it? I'm sure somebody out there can help with this. What is it about mirrors, even staring into them, that seems to heighten the paranormal possibilities? Anybody have any ideas?
I suppose we could talk about looking into your own soul, self-examination. I really don't know, but there is something about mirrors, isn't there? Somebody out there will know. Hello there, Dark Matter, you're on the air.
Yes, can we talk about shadow people?
We can indeed. Turn your radio off, please.
Oh, well, it doesn't always go out there. That should be off now. I believe that I was touched by a shadow person, or I should say I believe one ruined my death. Ruined my death. Back in 1990, I had created this scenario where I was extremely depressed, was going to end my life.
Yes.
I blew up my trailer, literally.
My God.
And as I was being shoved to the floor from the pressure of the trailer exploding, this black figure appeared beside me, picked me literally off the floor, said, "It is not your time to die," and threw me through the wall.
Wow.
I think and believe that shadow people are here to be our guardians.
Well, that one was there for you, that's for sure. I don't know if they're all like that. Thank you very much for the call.
All right.
That creature, or whatever it was, saved him. Do I think they're here for that generally? I don't know. I wonder if anybody else has had a similar experience. Anybody out there actually been saved by one of these creatures? And again, let us define a shadow person. I know, chuckle, chuckle, right? But a shadow person, it begins in the corner of your eye. Almost everybody has had this experience. You're watching, I don't care, a computer screen. Some people think actually looking at a computer screen produces visions of shadow people, and I'll explain why. It has a certain refresh rate, and your eyes and your brain begin to get adjusted to this refresh rate. It's actually flickering. You don't know that. You don't see it, but trust me, it's flickering at a certain rate. And that does something to your brain. It begins to allow you to see something else. And by something else, I mean a movement that occurs in your peripheral vision, one way or the other, one eye or the other. And you see something move quickly across that peripheral vision. Not directly, although there have been certainly sightings of shadow people directly. But these generally are in your peripheral vision. And as for me, I'd just soon have them stay there. At any rate, that's what the gentleman is talking about. Pretty scary stuff. Shadow people. Peripheral vision. Surely you've seen something in the corner of your eye, right? Wonder what it was.
It's XM, baby, and we're very serious. To call Art Bell, please manipulate your communication device and call 1-855-REAL-UFO. That's 1-855-732-5836.
Well, all right, we're in open lines. Anything you want to talk about is fair game, and I mean anything. You've already had a little sampling. These things will go anywhere. You just never know. Anyway, you've got the number. I've got the pointer. And hello there. Dark Matter says you're on the air.
Hey, is this Art Bell?
It is.
Hey there, Roswell.
Thank you.
All right. Hey, this, my name is Brian D. And I just need some closure on something.
Okay.
All right. Now, when I was young, maybe about like 8 years old, I had a little thing that went on with me as a child, as far as like the house. I don't know that I was living in or whatever was going on, but a lot of like strange things used to happen to me, and my mom used to like beat me and stuff like that because she didn't have like the
strange things. Strange things like what?
Well, she used to say I used to sleepwalk, but when I was a child, I used to like get up. Things had me pulling me out my bed, had me walking around touching four corners of my bed. I couldn't stop. Things used to like open my doors. I'm walking through my house in the middle of the night. Like a force had me going down the steps all the way through the living room, the dining room, down into the dark, you know, part of the basement. I'm seeing white things flying around me and all this stuff. In the back of the basement, it's like a red light. We never had a red light in the back of the basement. It was always a green light. And it was a furnace be back there, and the furnace would, like, breathe. And it was like a force that had me coming to the, it's like I snap out of it, and I run, start running up the steps, and it's like something would, like, be grabbing me and pulling me back down the steps. And somehow, some way, I used to run upstairs and make it back into my room. And I used to always tell my mom this stuff, and my mother would never believe me, but she knew something was going on with me, and she didn't like the fact that I used to tell my my aunts and my uncles and them, and they used to joke at me and laugh and say I was crazy and stuff. So one day we had an incident where my little cousin and his mother came over our house, and me and my cousin in the hallway playing with this orange basketball, and he passed the ball to me. The ball bounced off me, went down the first flight of steps, then went down the other flight of steps. Now, we argue about who's going to go down there and get the ball, and I already knew that strange things was going on in the house. So we both went down the first flight of steps. We turned around, and there's, like, this guy, I call him Mr. Hyde, like the Dr. Jekyll Mr. Hyde. Like
yes.
Mr. Hyde. And he was dressed up in all black, in the all black and white suit, with this white, with the black hat, with the little white band going around, and he was holding the basketball in his hand, and he had the other hand, which was like, and it was like telling me to come here,
And you were how old then?
This was when I was like 8 or 9 years old, and a force was making me come down, and start making me go down the steps, and I couldn't stop myself, and I'm turning back, looking at my cousin, and he's sitting there just looking at me. And I'm going out of step. I got so close to the thing, his eyes was pearly white, was pearly black. I could see my own reflection off the guy. I remember the stuff always vividly to this very moment because nobody helped me with like what's going on. And
And I'm afraid I there's no way I'm going to be able to give you closure in a situation like that. I'm sorry that happened to you, but in terms of my giving you closure, not going to happen. That sounds like the sort of thing that you would run by, you know, a hypnotist who would regress you and try and find out what actually happened. I had a sister who sleepwalked, and it was really scary and really eerie and kind of dangerous. I wonder how many of the rest of you have had family members who sleepwalk. It's eerie. It really, really is eerie to see somebody sort of, because they're in, I don't know, a trance-like state. And you don't know what to do, to wake them up, to not wake them up.
usually the best thing is try to get them back to bed without waking them, if you're able to do it. But, you know, most times you really have to. Hello, Dark Matter. You're on the air. Hello.
Hey, this is Jim.
Hi, Jim.
Hey, I've got a story about glowing feet.
Glowing feet. Sure.
Sure. Whenever I was about 2001, I've been trying to call Art for ever since then. But anyway, my wife and my kids kept telling me they were seeing something go back and forth across the hallway in the back of our double wide there from one room to the other. I always thought they was nuts. But I never saw anything, but I would sit in the living room chair one day by myself, me and my chihuahua. He jumps out of my lap, runs down the hallway, just barking with his hair raised up. I still don't see anything down there. But I did see a light under the door. But my wife swears to God, she called me when I was on the road one night and says that she saw the glowing feet go from one room to the other.
Mm-hmm.
So I went back there with my children, and they have covered their mirrors up in all their rooms because they're also convinced that that's where they were coming from.
The mirrors.
Yeah, the mirrors. And we no longer live there, and we no longer have any problems like that. But the whole entire time we lived there, my kids were terrified to stay in a two-back bedroom.
I wonder what it is about mirrors. All right, well, listen, thank you very, very much for the story. I'm not sure what to make out of it. Glowing feet. And I guess that's all there was. No body. Glowing feet. And out of a mirror. Again. There's something about a mirror. And I'm trying to remember. You know, over the years, I've interviewed people about this. And there is something about a mirror. And I know one of you will come up with it. I can't recall it just offhand. Dark Matter, you're on the air.
How you doing, Art?
Doing fine, sir.
First of all, I want to say Roswell's.
Thank you.
First time caller, long time listener, and I just want to say thank you so much for choosing to come back on the air. You made my nights complete now.
Okay, thank you. That's Roswell's.
I found it fascinating. The guy called about the mirror.
Right.
I had an incident my wife and I did at the house we bought here probably about a year and a half ago. We was up in the bedroom, and about 1 o'clock in the morning, we're just laying in bed, getting ready to go to sleep, and something sounded like it was wiggling the door on the closet.
Yes.
And I sat up in the bed, and I looked at that, and I was like, looked at her, said, you hear that? She goes, yeah. And I was like, what in the world? And it just kept wiggling, and I was getting ready to get out of bed to go see what it was, and my wife grabs me, and she goes, no. And I says, well, something's obviously in there. I don't know what, but... Anyway, the door just opened. Door handle to open, you know, and I was just, I was flabbergasted by it. I was just like, what, you know? And anyway, we had a mirror, one of those long rectangle mirrors she does, on that door. And just as that door opened, that mirror cracked. And
I wonder what it is about mirrors. Do you have any thoughts? There's something that has to do with paranormal and mirrors. I don't know what it is.
I don't either. You know, the gal I talked to, a paranormal specialist, she said that, you know, she said basically the same thing. She goes, I can't quite describe it, but she says, I believe that they use, like, some sort of, like, a portal for it, you know? And my wife and I are, you know, this just happened roughly, I would say, 3 weeks ago, and we just kind of been tossing around because she's like, I really like to come over to your house and do some, you know, EVPs and stuff like that, you know. And my wife's just kind of like, I just particularly don't think I want people in my house overnight, but I was like, I think it'd be cool just to find out. If
I guess it would. I really don't know. Here's a way to think about it. EVPs are creepy. I'm sorry, but there's no other right way to put it. They're creepy. When you hear a voice, a disembodied voice, coming out of a recorder of any sort, it's creepy. If you heard that, well, this was recorded in a graveyard, it's really creepy. If you heard this is recorded here in your house, then it's creepy to the point of, hey, let's think about moving. So I wouldn't really want to hear
an EVP from my house. Thank you very much. How about the rest of you? Any thoughts on that? You're on Dark Matter and on the air. Hi. Hello there.
Oh, hey, I'm on the air.
Yeah, hey, yes, you are.
Oh, great. My name is Patrick. I'm from Georgia.
Yes, Patrick.
And I just want your opinion.
You're breaking up, Patrick. You're breaking up.
Oh, can you hear me?
I hear you, but you're every now and then breaking up pretty badly.
Oh, I'm sorry. Can you hear me now?
I do.
Okay, thank you. I've been listening to your show for a long time, and you talk about subjects about things that go bump in the night and all sorts of weird manner of people and things. And I was just wondering if you had heard about these people who dress up in animal costumes and run around the place called furries.
Furries?
Yeah, they dress up as all sorts of different animals and go to conventions. I don't know if it's paranormal. Well, it's definitely extra normal.
Are they Trekkies?
No, I kind of. I don't know. They're crazy things. I don't know. But
yeah,
I don't know. I was just
Let's try this. Are you a furry?
Well, I don't know.
Come on, let's hear it.
Maybe.
What do you dress up as?
Well, let's see. Sometimes.
Now we're getting to it here.
Well, sometimes it's a lion.
A lion.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
When you dress up as a lion, do you find that people are surprised? Do they get upset? Do they laugh? They run?
They laugh. They seem to like it. Seems to be a thing that makes people happy. It's a happy suit. It's nothing. It's not like a voodoo mask. It looks like a football team mascot.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's okay if you're on a football field, but you know, if you're in somebody's living room, they might be very upset.
Just break through the wall.
Uh-huh. Yes, exactly. All right. So there you have it, a furry. How many other furries are out there? Good Lord only knows. People who like to slip that fur burden thing over their head and go and see the neighbors. That's funny, furries. Hi there, Dark Matter, you're on the air.
Hello, Art. How you doing?
Hello. Just fine, sir. Where are you?
This is Bill. I'm in the high desert in California.
Okay. I need to start asking people where they are. Okay.
Go ahead. That's where I'm from. Anyhow, I know all about Ely, Nevada. I was responsible for all the electronic systems that went from California to Utah, including that radar site that was on top of that mountain looking down into Ruth.
You're telling me that you know all about Ely?
I know all about the town of Ely, the surrounding area of Ely, Cherry Creek.
You know about the crash?
No. I don't know about the crash, and I went up there for 25 years, and no one up there could ever tell me about it. I've been to the Railroad Museum. I've gone through it a few dozen times.
Have you heard about the crash?
I have never found anyone that can tell me about the crash. I'm sorry, but I wanted to let you know there are a lot of miners up there, so if anybody goes there up there to check things out, be very careful.
You're all right. This was in July of 52.
Yeah, I wasn't there then.
Okay.
No, I worked for the military, for the Air Force at Edwards Air Force Base. And so for 20 years, I had to go up there at least six times a year and spend a week or two up there because I had 19 sites, microwave sites, including that radar site from Utah back to Edwards and across Area 51. I had one that looked right down over Area 51. I used to go up there, and after the helicopters let me through, after I finished my work that I had to do,
why did the helicopters let you through?
Because I was authorized. I have a site on top of the mountain that looks down over Area 51.
Well, okay, then you can probably tell me quite a bit about Area 51, right?
I can just tell you kind of what it looks like from sitting on top of the mountainside, looking down at it with binoculars, eating my lunch.
Well, almost everybody can do that, right? Binoculars, mountainside.
You can't get up on top of the mountain anymore. They've got all those roads blocked off, and a black helicopter comes out to check you out when you drive up there.
Yeah, okay. Well, what have you seen?
I've seen just things on the ground, normal things, regular things, nothing unusual, no flying saucers there. I've had B-52s fly over me at 100 feet going up and down those valleys, up through those valleys up in there.
Boy,
but I've never
seen
any UFOs, and I've never seen anything unusual. Now, I might have seen some of the stealth fighters when they were coming along. You know, when they were initially being tested.
Oh, no, wait a minute. Now you've seen stealth fighters.
Oh, yeah, I've seen the stealth fighters, the stealth bombers. I've seen all that.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't help you out as far as the crash goes. I'm sorry. I've never seen anything about that. I hope there's something there. And I used to have to drive right up to Cherry Creek. And there is no big towns up there. It's just one or two buildings. There might be some people in them here and there. The railroad is still there. That railroad was used to haul the ore from the Ruth Mine, which was the largest open copper pit mine, up to McGill, which was the processing plant for processing ore into gold and silver.
All right. Well, you heard Jeremy Meter's story.
Yes, I did.
About it, right?
Yes, I did.
Other than the fact that he was a little splintered in the way he told it, what did you think of the story?
It was a very interesting story. He was a little bit discombobulated, but other than that, if he'd have gotten a little more into it or knew more about the area, I don't know. I knew a lot of the areas he talked about, but then anyhow, I think it's a good possibility, but I'd never heard of it. And I've been
Nor had I. Many times,
and talked to all the people in the town. I knew the people in the newspaper.
All right, I'll tell you what. The next time you go up there, ask about this. All right?
I will. I will
right,
definitely.
Yep. All right. I'm sorry. Thank you very much. Please do that. In other words, if you really do frequent the area and know people up there, then by all means, just say, hey, listen, I wonder if you know anybody who knows about a crash, a UFO crash that was said to have occurred here back in 1952. In other words, don't come at it, you know, kind of like you're in MIB or something. Just, you know, kind of casually say, what do you know? Dark Matter, you're on the air.
Hi, Art.
Hello.
Roswells?
Thank you.
Yes. Minnie Roswells, this is Levi from Tulsa calling in about
Levi.
Your question on the mirrors.
Yes, sir.
And I've always had a lifelong fascination with the occult, and I'm also practice witchcraft. And the reason why we use mirrors is because they are a portal. They allow you to see the reverse and the opposite side. Which
and
is like
they, I take it they allow the opposite side to see you.
Yes. Fact is, a couple of more well-known among some circles is like when you're summoning a djinn, you use a mirror as a primary source.
All right.
And then they can see you. You can see them through that kind of discussion. Same with, like, scrying. The mirror allows you to see the other side.
Scrying, that's it, yes.
So, yeah, that's pretty much the main reason why people use mirrors is and why the paranormal is attracted to them is it allows you to see the other side as a portal.
What have you seen through mirrors?
Me personally, I've seen a few paranormal experiences, mostly friendly ghosts, I hope. I usually keep a lot of my mirrors covered in my house because of that reason. Because I'm also attuned to the supernatural, so I get senses, I get feelings, I see glimpses, like they're trying to talk to me. Because it's been one of my family traits for a while.
The only thing I want to see in a mirror is myself, and I'm not wild about that.
Yeah, if you're not open to it or you tell them they're not welcome, usually they don't come to the mirror. But you have to reinforce that they only come when you want them to. Otherwise,
I'm going to try and remember that. Uh-huh. In other words, mirror, mirror on the wall, don't show me anybody else at all.
You could do it that way. Usually when I'm dealing with them, I just tell them in a firm voice, please leave, not right now, and usually I don't have to worry about them after that.
All right. Well, I'll certainly keep that in mind. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Bye.
Mirror, mirror on the wall. No, thank you. I've seen it all. Don't want any moving figures. No wispy figures. No ghosts, no goblins.
Seasons don't feel the reaper, nor do the wind, the sun, or the rain. We can be that day. Come on, baby, don't feel the reaper. Baby, take my hand. Don't feel the reaper. We'll be able to fly.
My mind, love, what a tale my thoughts could tell. Just like an old time movie about a ghost from a wishing well. In a castle dark or a fortress strong, with chains upon my feet, you know that ghost is me. And I will never be set free. As long as I'm a ghost, you can't see.
From the area of 51, this is Dark Matter with Art Bell. To join the show, please call 1-855-REAL-UFO. That's 1-855-732-5836.
I'm not sure what we're talking about right now. Sort of a little bit of everything. It's called Open Lines. It's called Unscreened Open Lines. So anything that you want to talk about is fair game. That's what it's really all about. That goes with me. Hi there. You're on Dark Matter.
Hello, Mr. Bell. Great to talk to you, sir.
Great to talk to you. Sounds like you're moving right along in a truck.
Oh, yes, sir, I am. Yes, sir. Down here in Texas.
Okay.
I wanted to ask you about, back about 15 years ago, you had a recording supposedly from hell. And I wondered if maybe you could replay that, because it really affected me a lot, and I really wanted to hear about that again.
You really don't want to hear that, do you?
Well, not necessarily, but I remember it had a terrible effect on me, and it seemed like something I'd heard before. And it was really it's troubled me. I mean, I still remember it from 15 years ago when I was like a kid.
Right. Are you really sure you want to hear that? In the dark, in the nighttime, in a truck, in Texas?
Well, yes, sir. If there's some kind of explanation to what it is, I mean,
All right. You wish, you receive. In the just stay there. Don't hang up. Are you still there? Good.
All right, sir.
In the 1980s, Russian scientists in Siberia were performing a series of borehole experiments. These digs were typically performed for purposes of geotechnical investigation and the location of rare mineral deposits. But in this case, the geologists in Russia simply wanted to see how deep they could go. This is a true incident, or at least a reported incident. It was in the wire service. Their experiment began without incident, but when their drill reached the 9-mile mark, that would be deeper than anyone had ever drilled before, its rotation became erratic. They had apparently drilled into a hollow opening underground. Inside the cavern, temperature sensors read upwards of 2,000 degrees Fahrenheit. It was then they decided to send a microphone down to gather more data. The microphone only lasted about 30 seconds in the heat of the cavern before malfunctioning. But in those 30 seconds, the scientists caught something incredible on tape.
Yes, sir. I remember it very clearly.
Oh,
There you go. That's it. You really sure you wanted to hear that, huh?
Well, I remember it very clearly, but I'd always wondered if hell was maybe more transdimensional than something that was just in the middle of the earth.
Listen, I don't know what it is. It's horrible. And
it's horrible.
It sounds like hell
to
me.
I had to pull over to the side of the road.
Ha ha! Yeah, well. I'm glad you've enjoyed it.
Well, I don't know if I enjoyed it, but thank you so much, Mr. Bell, and thank you so much for coming back.
One quick question.
Yes, sir.
You figure that's where you're headed?
No, sir.
You sure about that?
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
Makes it easier to listen to then. Okay, thank you very much for the call. Have a good night. Well, you wanted to hear it. There have been many who say that's baloney. And it's hogwash, and it's made up, and it's this, and it's that. But it is what it is. Same recording from years ago. It was a legit wire story. And it may be so much hogwash, or maybe not. You decide. Dark Matter, you're on the air. Hello.
Hello, Art.
Hi.
This is Ward calling from Running Springs, California.
Hey, Ward.
Hey, I wanted to say Uber Roswells and 51s from Bell Gab.
Uber Roswells.
I got
that. Thank you. That's fine.
And thank you for saving us from 10 years of snoring on the radio. I wanted to actually tell you that, you know, a lot of us have been living on your old shows in MP3 format. And you've discussed some things in there that you talked about, but you really didn't go into detail. So could you discuss... I have three questions for you here. Any of your closet experiences, any of your red-eye experiences, or any
One thing at a time. What do you mean closet experiences?
Well, you said you were really afraid as a kid of the closet door being open, and you still can't sleep with a closet door open.
I don't. I close the closet door. But I've never had any really negative experience, and the reason is because I close the damn thing.
Well, what about your Ouija board story or red eyes?
Ouija board, I won't talk about. Red eyes are awful. Absolutely awful. I mean, the worst thing that you could see in the dark in the night would be a pair of red eyes. If you do see them, then probably you're headed for, well, you heard what I played there a minute ago, right?
Yeah, frightening stuff.
Mm-hmm. Appreciate the call, sir.
Thank you, Art.
Thank you, and take care. I've always been ill-disposed to red eyes, red glowing eyes. As a matter of fact, there was a story of a chupacabra. I think it turned out to be a dog. I'm not really sure. But part of the description of what this guy saw, he shot what he thought was a chupacabra. And they're still arguing, I think, about what it was. But it had red glowing eyes. Don't like red eyes. Dark Matter, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi, Art. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Maker Roswell's to you.
Excellent.
I've got an EVP story for you.
Okay.
My mom and dad, when I was a young boy, were involved in... playing around with people that, you know, messed around with white witchcraft and Ouija boards and tarot and such. My mom has a copy on, I know you remember the old reel-to-reel.
Sure.
She played it for me during one of these sessions, I guess, that they were with their friends. And on the tape, you could hear, the only way I could describe it would be in a whisper, but a loud enough whisper, but not a, I would say, evil. And you could hear two things being said, saying, shut the door and leave the key.
Shut the door and leave the key?
Leave the key. Those were the only two things you could hear, and...
from the time I heard that until now, it still gives me the chills. I've never heard any other EVP before. I just tuned into your show tonight,
mm-hmm.
and I wanted to share that with you.
Well, why were your parents messing around with stuff like that?
My mom was on a spiritual journey. She tried everything. TM, S, you know.
I do.
They dabbled in all these things for quite a while. And
well, you know, when you dabble in those things, a lot of times those things dabble back.
Yeah, eventually they became Catholics.
Really?
So, yeah.
Interesting road.
Yeah.
Interesting road indeed. From witchcraft and dabbling, as he put it, to Catholicism. You know, as unlikely a road as that sounds like, I get it. In other words, if you dabble enough and you get into dark areas to the degree that you become a believer in things dark and things, dare I say it, evil, then I would think at some point in your life you would turn from that to what you would think would save you. Does that make sense? Certainly does to me. Prove one and you've proven the other, kind of like Richard's white bird. Hello there, Dark Matter, and you have arrived.
Art?
Yes.
This is Mike from...
Mike, please turn your radio off.
It's off. It's off.
Okay, thank you.
This is Mike from, from Modesto, California. Mega Roswell Dittos.
Thank you.
Wanted to ask you a question.
Yes.
I have a cat, and I'm going to sound crazy because I'm not a nut, but this cat sits on numerous occasions looking up at the ceiling and following something. Now, I know
this. Oh, yes. Oh, no, you're not crazy. I've seen it all the time with my cats. They see things that we do not. There's no question about it.
What do you think they are, Art?
Something that, given the opportunity, would grab your neck and rip it out.
Oh, my God, I got the cat here to save me.
Or maybe just a bug going across
the room. I look for insects, but there's none there. I got another question for you. I was looking at the Sea Crane advertisement, and
yes.
I noticed you standing next to a King Air 350. Are you a pilot, and is that your airplane?
Not even a little bit of a pilot. My big experience in the air, sir, was crashing in a hang glider, breaking my arm.
Oh, well, so much for piloting.
compound fracture, actually, up in Alaska.
Holy cow.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
Thank you. Right, thank you very much, and I'll briefly tell you the story. I was working for KENI Radio up in Anchorage. And the radio station folks convinced me that it'd be a cool idea to promote the radio station by having me, who did their morning show, go off into the wilderness in Alaska, kind of into the wilderness as far as I was concerned anyway, down near Palmer, Alaska, and hang glide. And for that purpose, they had found the owner of a hang gliding company, right? And he came along for my safety. And we were supposed to run along with this hang glider off a small cliff, or hill, I guess would be more like it, and take flight and then land. And that was going to be that was it. They said, Art, nothing can go wrong. The wind is perfect. No problems. Guarantee you, you'll be fine. So, yes, I was in the air. My God, I had taken flight. The air was under me. The sky above, the ground below. And I think that I was probably airborne for about 10 seconds, maybe 12. And then that which could not happen occurred. as I was lying on the ground with my bones sticking out, the guy said, you know, I'm really sorry. He said, I'm sorry, Art. That wind came out of nowhere. That crosswind came out of nowhere. And I looked up at him and I said, and I was kind of numb. I said, you said it couldn't happen. I don't remember what was said after that. And on the way to the hospital, everybody donated their drugs to me. And so by the time I got to the hospital to get the arm set, the doctor looked at me and said, he's had enough. Dark Matter, you're on the air.
Bravo, Art. How are you tonight?
Okay. Kind of enjoying open lines.
Oh, it's very, very good. I have a quick question about that audio clip you played in the first hour. It said the name Peter Gersten, and that made my ears perk up. How old is that audio clip?
Well, pretty old, in the sense that, you know, Jesse Marcel was on there, the original Marcel. So, pretty old. I thought very revealing. I mean, here we have a man who knows aircraft up and down, inside and out. And the man said, this was not one of our aircraft. You know, this was absolutely out of this world. And what do you say about that?
Well, I just don't know. But I heard Peter Gersten's name, and I actually met him a couple of years ago in Sedona.
Sure.
Peter Allen Gersten. Is this the same Peter Gersten?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, I didn't realize he was involved that much with Roswell. When I met with him, he was really stuck on talking about some of Michael Talbot's theories about the holographic universe, and I didn't even really get the chance to visit with him much about some of his research with the Phoenix Lights and with other UFO cases, because he was really devout in trying to spread the message that that we're in a big matrix, and that matrix is breaking down. So I just wanted some clarification from that. Thank you very much.
Wait. Matrix, do you believe that there's any chance, sir, that we are all living in a matrix, that we're all, actually science is looking at this right now and getting ready to try and test for it. I mentioned this to professor
we
had on.
I've heard that over the air in the last couple of days, and I think that the answers are definitely out there. I went down to Sedona for a Indigo Children gathering here on 11/11 of 2011, and that's when I got to meet Peter. And the whole week that I was down there, I got to see a lot of things around all the different portals and everything else there that would really indicate that something's breaking down. So there's more than meets the eye here. We're definitely crossing over to a different dimension. That's kind of what I feel that the whole 2012 movement was us moving into that new paradigm where we can see new things like that. So.
All right, I really appreciate the call. Thank you. How many of the rest of you think that we are living in some sort of matrix? Yeah, sure, I saw the movie, like everybody else. But science is seriously considering this matter now, that we're in a matrix, that is to say. I've got quite a bit of material on it here, but I don't have to say much more than I've just said. How many of you have wondered whether we're actually living in a matrix? How many of you have seen some sort of evidence that you would cite that we actually are in a matrix? In other words, we're all puppets walking around in a pre-planned universe. And that if somebody were to throw the right switch, the pre-planned universe would effectively disappear and we'd be somewhere or somewhen else. Dark Matter, you're on the air. Hello.
Yes, sir.
Hi. Turn your radio off, please. Always okay. First. Everybody do that.
Okay. All right, there we go.
Okay.
First, I'd like to say first-time caller, and I really enjoy your show. I've listened to it off and on for years. Finally, I have a satellite radio, and I can hear you clearly now instead of the AM stuff.
Isn't that nice?
Oh, it's wonderful, wonderful. Every chance I get, and I'm up this late, I'm an over-the-road driver, and every time I'm up this late and I get a chance to tune in, I do so.
I've always frankly thought, I know they have trucker shows and stuff like that, but I've always thought that we had more listeners in trucks than the trucker shows had.
I have no doubt about that. Your show's very entertaining. It gives food for thought on all sorts of subjects that, you know, you don't consider every day. And I really appreciate you doing this. You know, it's really entertaining, keeps me awake, and I really enjoy it. As far as what you were talking about earlier, about whether or not I thought there was a matrix or something, I don't feel like that. I have had one experience in my life that I know to be true. I guess I could entertain the thought of being different dimensions or possibility of spirits or demons or something like that.
Let's stick with what happened. What happened to you?
Well, what happened to me was when I was a kid, I used to go to bed at night and I would dream. And the next day, everything I dreamed would come true. And, yeah, it was really wild because I was a kid and it was scary to me. I wasn't old enough to appreciate it, I guess. It scared me more than anything. And I did notice, however, that if I saw an event, it would just be certain events, and a lot of them were meaningless, you know. But if I recognized an event about to happen that I had dreamed of the night before, and I did something different than what was in my dream, then the entire rest of the day was absolutely new to me, and I didn't know what was going to happen.
I've never heard that before. I've never heard it. So you were able to actually have a dream every night, and then the next day recognize that dream, and you could either go along with it or change something.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
How cool is that?
Well, it was scary to me, but I even proved it one time to my parents. I got up that morning, and my father was religious about watching the morning news, and I got up early that morning and was telling them about somebody had died and they were bringing his coffin off the plane and it had the American flag on it. And I don't even remember who it was that died. It was a senator or something. As they were watching the news, hear it come on, and they started showing them all the events that I just told them about. And I remember them looking at each other and just, you know, like, what are we saying?
Probably saying something like, is that really our seed?
Yeah. They're like, I mean, they didn't know what, they didn't know what to say to me. You know,
I understand. They pretty much
ignored it, you know?
I get it. Thank you very much. That is fascinating. How about any of the rest of you have that? Can you imagine having a dream every single night and having it come true the next day religiously? And or, as he pointed out, this was a real trick part of it, I thought, being able to recognize that you're in the middle of that dream and then changing something that then changed the rest of the day. Now, what does that say about time? I'm going to be thinking about this one for a while. That is really, really cool. A Dark Matter has you on the air. Hello.
Oh, that's wonderful. Let me take out my gum. I almost swallowed it there. So excited. My heart's beating like a zebra tap dancing on Jell-O.
It'll get better.
Okay. Here's one for you. It's not a UFO story, but it's an absolutely true story that happened about 22 years ago. Back in the late 50s, early 60s, I was a youngster back east, and I had a great-great aunt who I spent a lot of time with. We were very close. And then about the mid-60s, when I was about 10, she and my parents had a falling out, and I wasn't allowed to see her anymore.
Right.
And then about 10 years after that, she died. but I didn't go to the funeral. And then about 22 years ago, I was visiting my hometown, and I said, I wonder if I went to the cemetery, if I could find my great-great-aunt's grave.
Mm-hmm.
So I had been there as a child, maybe when I was 6 or 7, and I barely remembered how to get to the place. I drove, and I ended up on a side street, but it was next to the cemetery, so it was a nice day. I got out of the car, walked along the edge of the property where there was a little stone wall, and then I got to a break in the wall, and there was a pathway that I guess the digging equipment and groundskeepers used that for access. So I said, well, I'll just go in here, because it was a very large cemetery, thousands of graves.
Okay.
So I walked down this service path for about 20 feet, and then I stopped, and I looked to my right, and like 4 or 5 headstones down that row is my great-great-aunt's grave.
Okay.
Now, I have no explanation for that.
You mean just being so close to it? The fact that you just went in, boom, there it is?
Well, that I walked in, I barely knew how to get to the cemetery. So I got there, walked down that little path,
perhaps,
and then
you
stopped.
Were guided. Yeah, maybe you were guided.
Well, and see, that's not the only experience of a psychic, I guess, nature that I've had. In the mid-80s, I studied with a psychic. And then the very first day of class, there were about a dozen people in the class, none of whom I met, I had ever known before. And the first exercise that we did was to hold an object owned by somebody else. Okay,
mm-hmm.
I held this woman's ring, I guess it was, or a bracelet, and picked up vibes or impressions of her home.
I believe
half a dozen things.
I believe it, and probably more than that, things about her life and the rest of what might come along with something like that. You can do that. You might try it. Pick up an object that belongs to somebody else and just have some quiet time. You know, in this day and age, we don't have much quiet time. As I mentioned earlier, we have the internet. We have Facebook. We have a million different things to occupy our minds, and we have very little downtime, very little quiet time. But if you want to try an experiment and you want to have some fun, if this kind of thing for you is fun, then give it a shot. Pick up an object of somebody else that belongs to somebody else. Don't be seen marching away with it, but if you can do it reasonably, hold on to something and see what you get. It requires, as I mentioned, quiet time. Dark Matter, you're on the air. Hi.
Mega Roswell, Art Bell.
Thank you.
This is Mike calling from Central California. I had a quick question. If you're going to do any truth or trash episodes in the future.
I might. Sure, why not?
All right, I sure miss those. Anyways, I'll keep it short. That was it. Great to hear you back on.
Seven.
Yeah, I had some other stuff, but I totally forgot. 7-3.
Totally. Blew it out of your mind. 7-3. That's ham radio. Truth or trash. That's kind of fun. And it's very simple. You simply get somebody who's got a story. You know, it wouldn't be as easy for me. Because I'm not, I would have to actually screen the calls to some degree myself. To get somebody who's got a really outrageous story. And let them tell it, and then kind of have a panel of 3 or 4 people to judge whether it's truth or trash, and then have the person come back and, you know, tell the panel if they're right or wrong. It's a lot of fun. You're on Dark Matter. Hello. Hello. No, I guess you're not. Let's try this one. Dark Matter, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, Art Ross. How are you, my friend?
Thank you.
Two things I have to tell you, and one's a complaint. The first thing is, as a young kid, we were throwing snowballs at cars, and it was the middle of the night, we saw a big, huge orange fireball going across the sky.
Wait a minute.
Couldn't explain
when,
it.
When you were a kid throwing snowballs at cars, I think seen you, you saw a big orange fireball in the sky?
Yeah, in northeast Pennsylvania, and couldn't explain it. I looked it up on the internet, couldn't find nothing.
Maybe it was a driver shooting back.
It could have been. It could have been. But the second incident that we saw in that matter was right after 9/11. It was the week, more or less the week going into the week after. We were driving up Newburgh, New York. We're 18-wheeler drivers, and we were doing drop and hooks, turn around, coming back. Well, you know, that's Newburgh Airport's up there, and they have the Army base or whatever. We saw three lights in the sky right against Interstate 84 with a dome light, you know, like a reddish dome light in the middle. The guy with me, he's a diehard Jehovah Witness. And we both looked at it. We pulled over off the road, down the road, because we were a little nervous. This thing did not go up and down, left or right. It went straight. It didn't, no hovering or nothing. I mean, we were underneath it, didn't see nothing. But a little bit ago, my cousin was going down the other direction because we all had to come down in the PA. He saw the same identical thing, but we had to get out away from the cell phone. You know, the towers are bad between the mountains. Cut the other side in the Pennsylvania. He calls me and says, "You won't believe what I saw." And he got me hooked on you. I give him the reason why I'm loving that you're back. Well, he saw the identical thing down in Pennsylvania off Interstate 78.
All right, listen, I've got to take a break, so I've got to go, but I appreciate the call.
Pleasure, my friend.
Take care. And do take care. This is Dark Matter. I'm Art Bell.
Some velvet morning when I'm straight, I'm gonna open up your gate and maybe tell.
This is Dark Matter with Art Bell. To join the show, please call 1-855-REAL-UFO. That's 1-855-732-5836.
This is really cool. Somebody has wormholed me. That doesn't sound right, does it? Somebody has sent me a message through the wormhole which says, is it because of the entanglement theory that holding objects can tell you things? What a really cool thought. Is it because of entanglement? Now remember, what do we know about entanglement? We know it's quantum theory. We know that if two objects are made familiar to each other, particles, electrons, which flip and flop, they can then be separated. First they have to be together, but then they can be separated, well, by as much distance as you would care to put between them, and they will flip and flop in unison from that point forward and forevermore. So this person is saying, is it because of that entanglement theory, if you project it, that holding objects can tell you things? Is that fascinating or what? Dark Matter, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Art. You.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
My heavens. I have been waiting to talk to you for probably 10 years about this story.
All right. Turn your radio off and let's.
I did, sir. I did,
okay.
Sir.
Okay. Right.
I live in Santa Cruz.
Okay.
And I was visiting a friend of mine in Monterey Bay, down in Capitola, which is near the power plant.
I know where it is.
Yeah. And it's a beautiful area. And this was one of these really nice homes, and we had dinner, and then I started I was having a cigarette because I smoked, and I was walking along the pool, and I was looking out over the bay, and all of a sudden I saw this green light come up from under the water. And this object came up. It was glowing green, and it had kelp draped all over it, which was very remarkable because normally you don't hear people mentioning little details like that. And it floated.
No, I'd be so gone. I would be panicked, and my heart would probably jump out of my chest. I mean, a glowing green object with kelp on it surfaces. What was it?
I don't know. It kept surfacing, and then it kept going up into the air, and then it started to move towards the moss landing plant. And at that point, the two other people I was having dinner with, they happened to have one of those telescopes, those little spy glasses.
I used to live, by the way, in Moss Landing, so you know.
Oh, cool.
I used to eat strawberries in the strawberry field under the high tension lines coming up out of the plant.
Oh,
half a million volt.
Fantastic strawberries there. But we had a spyglass, and so we started looking at it through the spyglass.
Yes.
It raised up. It went across the bay over to Moss Landing, because we're in Capitola at that point. So, there's a few miles between those. And it hovered in front of the Moss Landing plant for about 30 minutes, and we were looking at it through the spyglass, all three of us. I called the cops. They said, "You're seeing a fishing boat." I'm like, fishing boats don't float in the air, and they're not green.
Covered. No, they're not.
And when we looked at it through the spyglass, we actually saw that the green light was actually a combination of elliptoid lights that were green, amber, and green.
Mm-hmm.
And then the weirdest thing that two of us saw, my husband didn't see it, but the other person we were with saw it, was it looked like there was some kind of a mechanical arm that came across that was going out of whatever it was, a craft, I'm assuming, and taking something from the power plant. Then... For 30 minutes, it sat there doing this, and we finally had to leave because we had to get home, because we live in Santa Cruz. And I kept watching it out the back seat of the car, or out the back window, and it winked out and disappeared.
that's what I would have done. I'd have winked out. I'm sorry. We're so out of time. It has been a pleasure. Very interesting Jeremy Meter story early on. Make of that what you will, and fascinating open lines. It's been my pleasure, and we'll see you tomorrow night. Have a great night, everybody, from the high desert, the great American Southwest. Dark Matter says good night.
Are we running out of time? Midnight in the desert.